track. The next mile to bring sight to the blind man. It's down to the left child. We will survive in this country wilderness. Swimming through the waters of Babylon like a rebel fish. Journalist, specialist, predator and survivalist. Spitting heaven, fire from his lips. Burn the same driver.
Welcome, listeners, to Time for an Awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, New Media for the New Millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing." Therefore, get wisdom. With all that, get an understanding. Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. Excuse me. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, which is the homepage, and catch the live stream at that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Catch the live stream there also. You can go to ourradionetwork.com. Again, that's ourradionetwork.com. They broadcast out of the Black Belt and catch the live stream there. Or you can download TuneIn to any of your handheld devices. TuneIn is a free app. And in that TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon and you can stream the program live, even into your car if you have the Bluetooth capabilities or the auxiliary connection. Again, that's Time for an Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Again, that's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for an Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, you can type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you'll always see interesting content being posted daily by myself or Brother Richard. And do me a favor, before you leave that page, just hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program. With the fan page on Facebook, and Time for an Awakening Media is there, always full of the latest podcast of the various programs on Time for an Awakening. Interesting articles that you can read, download at later times, and share with your friends. Also, check out that Time for an Awakening marketplace and our partnership with Abibi Toume. Always interesting things being put in the marketplace all the time. African language classes, classes on education, economics, social systems, health, and much, much more being taught by professors on both the continent and in the diaspora. So make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. It's 7:09 here in the city of Philadelphia on our Sunday edition program, and our special guest this evening will be attorney, organizer, and founder of the Black Lawyers for Justice. Brother Malik Zulu Shabazz will be joining us to talk about the Black Economic Empowerment Movement and the sanctions campaign that started this week. We'll get some information from Brother Shabazz about what's going on and some other important initiatives that has been started or being started this month. And you can conversate too with Brother Malik Zulu Shabazz by dialing in at 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832 is the call number. And we'll be right back to get the program started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. With your host, Brother Elliot, Sundays 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. And before we get started with our program this evening, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum here in Philadelphia at 7th and Arch Street, Brother Richard. Is with us, Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Elliot.
How are you, sir?
Today has been, you know, kind of like a good moving along Sunday, and I'm looking forward to you know, speaking with Brother Sabaz about the, you know, the different initiatives that's going on.
You know, it ought to be an interesting conversation. We haven't had Attorney Sabaz on the program in might have been a little over a year. But it's good to have him back to talk about, because he has some other initiatives going on that's starting this month that he'll talk about in our, in, you know, in the course of our conversation with him tonight. But one of the things we're going to start out with is the Black Economic Empowerment Movement and the sanctions campaign. And it's a worldwide movement too, Richard, because there's other countries involved, other countries in the diaspora and on the continent that's involved in it. But let's see, it's straight from Brother Malik is with us, attorney, organizer, and founder of the Black Lawyers for Justice. Brother Malik Zulu Shabazz is with us this evening. Brother Malik, how are you, sir?
I'm doing just fine. Can you hear me?
I can hear you loud and clear.
How you doing there, brother?
I'm fine. It's my honor to be on with you, and it's a pleasure hearing the liberation vibration of this show, and I'm happy to be back on.
Yeah, we're happy to have you with us. It's been a while. Brother Malik, start out, because listen, you're always active. You know, even if I don't talk to you, I see the things that you're doing all the time. Talk about the worldwide Black Economic Empowerment Movement and the sanctions campaign, because I think that that's something that everybody can be involved in. You know, we see a lot of things going on, and some of the grassroots people or people in the neighborhoods, they don't know exactly how they can get involved, but this is something that we can all participate in. Talk about it from your vantage point.
Yes, sir. And I like the way you characterize it. This is something that's very important to everybody, and that's the Black economy and how we are going to make it through these perilous times and be better prepared for the future. And so this message tonight about our Buy Black offensive, it's a national Buy Black campaign offensive, and it's an international sanctions, international economic sanctions that we are placing on the exploiters of our people around the country. On May 19th, we in 15 cities, we began at the Chinese embassy in the morning addressing the human rights abuses of the Chinese government against Africans in China and also in America. And then we did flank out and fan out. I'm talking about Black empowerment. I'm talking about, yes, protected by Black Lawyers for Justice. I'm talking about the new Black Panther Party, the original Black Panthers of Milwaukee, grassroots, as you're saying, fanned out and shut down, in this case, Chinese-owned businesses in cities all across America. And on May 30th is National Black Saturday. We're calling for more sanctions, not only against Chinese-owned businesses, but against any business in our community that is exploiting our community and not doing right. And any business that needs to be curtailed so that the Black people and Black merchants can have that business. So just to conclude, I want to say that on May 30th, we're following up on the tremendous success of May 19th. And we're launching Black Saturday, which is designed to support that Black retailer, that Black manufacturer, that Black business of whatever sort, whether it be a law office or whether it be a vendor or somebody online. We're saying here that Malik Zulu Shabazz, who is a businessman, but he's also the former chairman of the Panther Party. And we have organized grassroots soldiers, to be honest, soldiers in the field that are out here currently waging battle to make sure that Black dollars go into Black hands. That's really where we are right now. We are on the battlefield.
Yeah, Brother Malik, I know that you were down at the embassy down in Washington with some brothers around that Chinese embassy. Talk about some of the other initiatives going on in some of the other cities, because I saw some of them online.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Well, on May 19th, for example, I left from the Chinese embassy, which was a warning and a message to them that harm to Africans in China could bring harm to Chinese interests in America and around the world. And that's just not hype, as we proved on May 19th. And we do have partners in South Africa. We do have partners as a part of the worldwide Pan-African movement. We have partners in 20 nations that it will address any abuse by Chinese, by the European, or anybody. We just have to take a stronger and more aggressive stand, is what I'm saying, So on the 19th, yes, it was a Red Star restaurant on 123rd and 7th Ave. We shut it down. We shut down Yum Yums in Chinatown in Washington, D.C. We shut it down. In St. Louis, several Chinese-owned restaurants were shut down. And really, my dear brother, from a political, from what I call a political paramilitary perspective, what we was doing was testing the economic battlefield and testing to see how strong our street forces were so that we can build them up to wage, to use economic sanctions as a weapon for anything our people desire. That means reparations, that means injustice, that means gentrification. So here we are. We ran up against the police in New York who tried to stop our demonstration because, you know, they're heavy on the coronavirus and they're going to stop anybody from gathering. And so we had a showdown with whoever that precinct was, and I led that campaign, and I was able, by God's grace and using my legal training, to stop the 60-some-odd police and 12 police cars who all converged on us with their gloves and the handcuffs and all of that. And they wanted to frighten us and make us run away because as soon as we showed up, Red Star Restaurant got scared and they start shutting the doors. Then they say, no, we ain't going to shut the doors. We're going to call the police on these Negroes. The police will back us up. And sure enough, all the white police officers came, like the cavalry. Our 12 to 15 black, red, black, and green troops, we stood the line. And then we went by the law. We kept 6 feet apart and in a straight, solid line, and we didn't block the door to the entrance. We didn't block the sidewalk. And with the power of the Word of God and the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey and Malcolm X on Malcolm X Day in our mouth, we froze the police, kept the demonstration going, shut the whole thing down. The black captain had to come, understand that we were right under the law. And they had to leave with egg on their face because we're disciplined, well-trained soldiers that are still willing to go out here. And they were happy at the Black West Indian Deli and grocery store across the street. They were jumping like they had the Holy Ghost because we were telling people on the bullhorn, and don't shop here, go over there to your Black West Indian brother and sister. So this is what went down in Atlanta. This is what went down in St. Louis. It went down in Milwaukee and Madison, Wisconsin, Norfolk, Virginia, where they went at the Chinese Chamber of Commerce. But I want to be clear, we're dealing with the Chinese for specific reasons, but it's not just about the Chinese. This is about any non-black business entity that is sucking our blood and exploiting us. We have decided to use all our resources to fight for the black family, for the black future, for the black economy.
Attorney Shabazz, explain to our listening audience how this is related, and let me kind of draw my parable. You see a lot of our people now, and it's through, and I understand what it's from, it's through centuries, decades of colonialism and neocolonialism, where they don't see where all of our people, or all of this is related. They look at things if it's happening in the islands, if it's happening in South America, if it's happening in Britain, if it's happening on the continent, that it's happening to those people. It's not happening to me. Explain to our people how this is all related.
I don't see how. My great question. And you can't even be deaf, dumb, and blind and not see, hear, and feel what's going on in this hour. Everybody feels the pain when the economy shuts down. And when things shut, and when white America shut down historically, currently and presently, we feel the wrath of the shutdown. And so now we feel the wrath of not having any savings. We feel the wrath of not having done all of the financial and the economic things to better prepare ourselves, that we were warned to adhere to financial rules and laws. And then when the economy gets shut down, we get crushed. We hear all about the payroll protection program on the TV and how black businesses, couldn't qualify or deal with that. Some did, but many didn't, because we were not necessarily in business effectively to qualify for the times. So it is not that I have to, my dear brother, convince us that we are, as Dr. Khalid Muhammad, whose name I speak in today, that as Dr. Khalid Muhammad said, we don't own a rock, a rail, a spike, or a spoke, or a huff, or a puff of smoke. The Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad has taught us and shown us that we are economically dead and lifeless people, but he's also shown us a way out. So what I want to say is, my dear brother, the lack of black economy, the lack of black funds, the lack of black saving, the lack of black business, the lack of that being able to have to entrust to our children for a future, the lack of land ownership, the lack of control of the real estate in our community, the lack of control over who's hired and who's fired is all too painful, all too real for the masses in this hour. And what we're saying is never again, never again, these black Jews are saying, the black chosen people of God, never again will we allow ourselves to be on the bottom of the economic ladder, to be last and to be crushed when coronavirus crisis is happening, that we have to be stronger and our leadership must speak up stronger. We need leadership in this hour. That's what I'm saying. If the people aren't awake enough to the wretched conditions they live in, then we should have some cold-blooded, strong leadership raising the alarm in this hour. That's another reason why we're here.
We're in conversation tonight with attorney, organizer, and founder of the Black Lawyers for Justice, Brother Malik Zulu Shabazz. We're talking about the worldwide black economic empowerment movement and the sanctions campaign that was started this week. And we'll be talking about some of the other things that's going on that will be starting before the end of the month. The Shabazz University and a few other things that I want to get into tonight in conversation. You can get involved in the conversation too by dialing 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. Brother Richard, jump in.
No, I was just, I'm glad to say that. And Brother Shabazz, right now, because of the pandemic and I believe the change that is the structural change, the business relationships change is occurring. And that's, why the push for black empowerment and sanctions is so important. But, the thought came to me, could you help us by defining black empowerment in the context of this new change? Because everybody's saying things are not going to be normal, which, and then others say it shouldn't be because normal was no good. So for us, when we talk about black empowerment, how do you help us define that, what that new normal should be as it relates to black empowerment?
And I appreciate it. I think that black empowerment is a stage of development, and it signifies, almost like a verb, it signifies that attaining what we want, which is power, that it is attained by stages, by actions and procedures. So we always have been saying now for 20, 30, 50 years, or since the time of Malcolm, that we want black economic power. We want political power. We want educational power. And we made these demands, yet somehow we have fallen short in terms of achieving our goals and where we are now. So when we talk about black empowerment, we're bearing witness there's a process, that there's a procedure, there's a policy, there's a daily, there's a weekly, there's a policy change, there's a cultural change, there's change. We're admitting that there's a change in the way we do things. And therefore, empowerment now becomes a scientific examination of where we have failed to meet the gap between what we want and where we are. And so that's what, to me, is black empowerment is a process. We're involved in a process right now of shutting down, right? Not shopping at stores, not shopping at businesses, obeying your governor, obeying the federal government, the president, obeying the CDC. They are taking us through policies and procedures from this government to protect whatever, the American population, the American economy. But they've also conditioned us also for such policies that we must engage in now, which is the stopping of shopping, the selective buying, and the ability to withdraw our dollars and showing us that we can save and we can not spend all our money outside of our community. Right now, we have been conditioned through government and state policy to withdraw and hold our economy, our activities, and even our lives at the direction of the governors, the CDC, and the American president. Now, what we're saying as black leadership, as a collective, as a policy, that reasonable people here on this line, whether they pan-Africanist or not pan-African, that as black people, we must set now economic policy. We must set economic conditions. We must follow up on the position that our people are in now, take advantage of the fact that the government and the governors have disciplined them, and we're simply saying we must continue the discipline. We must continue the financial withdrawal, and we must focus in on the black economy. So this here is a pitch. See, black empowerment, as people seeing it, it is not another organization. You got the Nation of Islam. You got the New Black Panther Party. You got NAACP. That's not what this is about. This is a united front, a think tank of some of the most intelligent and sisters and brothers and some of the most active sisters and brothers in the country. And all I'm saying is that Malik Zulu Shabazz, right, I kind of got a little experience in several areas. Some of you know me as Black Lawyers for Justice and the Attorney at War. Some know me as the New Black Panther Party, the former chairman who's fighting in the way of Khalid Muhammad and part of the Black Muslim movement. Others of you who may not know me know that I'm very keen in the area of real estate development in one of the toughest real estate and most vibrant real estate markets in the city. That's Washington, D.C. Others know that every 2 weeks, that I'm paying out a payroll to 35 black employees and their families, and that I'm a master of certain fields of business and human services. So I'm not just talking business and advocating business. I have business experience in quality assurance, human resources, employee relations, training, getting that money that's our money. So all I'm saying here is that humbly, if you will just, we could try to, we're for a united front around the area of black economic advancement right now. That's what the sanctions are about. That's what the boots on the ground are about. That's what black-empowerment.org is about, where we're building the largest black business directory right now, feverishly. It's to us, it's just all about the handling the business right about now. And yeah, that's where we feel we can get the most unity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what you said, and you know, as you were as I was listening and you were saying the change in policy, you know, I would say over the last 70 years we've had as the black people in relationship to economic policy, and I wanted to see if you would agree, we have had a consumer policy. That's the meaning that we have been pushed as a rule to buy things instead of, as you say, to invest mm-hmm. in things, even into ourselves. So first, let me clarify that. Would you agree with that? That as a policy, we have been initiating a consumer policy compared to an investment policy with our disposable income?
I agree. Strictly a consumer policy, and a consumer policy that is overwhelmingly with non-black businesses.
Right.
Absolutely.
And
we have, the sad part about that is we haven't even set that policy. Right. That policy has been set for us.
Exactly. And I would agree with that, which when we talk about the, you know, in the empowerment and the initiative, the sanctions initiative was part of the sanction initiative. And I was thinking also about policy. Should we consider that we should have especially when we're talking about as it relates to China or even with ourselves, a trade to change the trade relationship policy. It seems that from an economic perspective, that we are, because we've been utilizing, even if it was given to us, a consumer policy, but we haven't had a trade relationship. That what I'm saying is that there's been an unequal exchange. We have been purchasing from other people, but other people haven't been, other people, not just black people, but other people have not been purchasing from us. Would you agree that that policy has to change in the black community?
100%, my dear brother. And that's such a beautiful way you frame that. And that's why we say empowerment, and these are stages of development. You know, when you stand up to a person and say, hey, I don't like our relationship, and I'm going to put a stop to it until we can rearrange the relationship. Well, that's pretty much what black empowerment is saying, not only to the Chinese, but to the black Asian relationship in general. Mm-hmm. You know, there's some history to this, and we're just stating as professionals, there's no xenophobia involved. You know, I mean, we're from the Black Panther legacy. We goes back to Mao. You know, I mean, there's a lot of positive things that I've had experiences in my life with Asian people. I have nothing against them because of their ethnicity or the color of their skin. But what we're saying is that the black Asian, and in this instance, the black Chinese trade and business relationship is unequal, that it is a one-way street, and that inside of that, there are human rights abuses and other domestic abuses here in America. And we're saying that we got to stop the relationship so we can reevaluate the relationship, you know, and that's what gets people respect. You know, that's what gets calls now coming in to us from China, and officials calling saying, hey, what's wrong? What's going on? Yeah. So we plan on this summer, like on May 30th, which is Black Saturday, similar shutdowns of stores are going on around the country. We're formally notifying the Asian business community, the Asian merchants associations in various cities, the resellers, the hotelers, all of them, that business as usual with blacks is fundamentally changing, that we're pulling the alarm. We're pulling the alarm on ourselves. We're recognizing our deficiencies. We're also pulling the alarm on you. But it's not just the Asians. It's our relationship to America in general. And yes, sir, we have to do what we have to do to change these relationships. You know, I saw sisters on the sewing machines putting the mask out of Africa, you know. And I mean, if we push, this is not hollow dream what I'm talking about. There can be seamstresses and clothing, and Africa can be the new manufacturing power of the world. You know, this is not without reason. And some people are correct when they say some, not all, but some of the Chinese development model, if studied by Africa, taking some study from that, can make Africa, and I would extend that to Africans in the diaspora, a major world manufacturing power.
And my, you know, final for this round of y'all on mine, and you can bear with me, because it seemed as we, and I think it's important in this moment, you know, where the coronavirus is showing the public health challenges that we have as a community because of our, in one instance, our institutional relationships or policies that we have or don't have, I mean, what we have with ourselves, and also the economic arrangement, you know, the unemployment, the food desert, and all these other things are interrelated in relationship to our health. But we also see that the government now is pumping out trillions of dollars. So in our empowerment, especially in this political season, would you say that we should assess the policy in relationship to the government and relationship to small businesses within the black community? They are, you know, pumping out this money, but there's not necessarily about relief, but about purchasing services and goods And those services can be around health itself. Shouldn't we be advocating as an economic empowerment that the government specifically direct dollars in that, create trade relationships in that area to be able to stimulate the economic empowerment in the Black community?
I would say that's an excellent question. I would say that, for example, in the last round of the payroll protection, or the last round of the stimulus, let's broaden it to the stimulus.
Mm-hmm.
The stimulus, which in some, which in many respects was designed to help small business in general, but it didn't, was not narrowly tailored and specific enough to help Black small business in general, which may have different impediments to it than the average white small business. For example, I've been just watching some of the others who are speaking on this subject, Mark Mariel or others on the television. And most, the overwhelming majority of Black businesses are sole proprietorships.
Yes.
And have one or more than two, no more than two employees. And that's an important form of our business life. But the stimulus packages that came out were not necessarily tailored for us. So therefore, we didn't make out as well as white small business. We don't have, when you say as a part of empowerment and what the government should do, there was not a Black economic block, a Black economic chamber of commerce. There was not a united Black leadership that stood firm or is standing firm purely on the economic question. That represents us. We don't have an economic force or leadership that currently represents us. Now, we should not despair because we can build that. But mm-hmm. we have to understand that if the stimulus went forth, for example, the political leadership, which is considered, I guess, the Congressional Black Caucus on a national level, state Black organizations, political caucuses on the state level, We cannot say that our political leadership or our church leadership or our civil rights leadership stood either as independent entities for our voice or together.
Exactly.
We just really wasn't prepared and really didn't have it together. Because when you do have it together, that's when crises like this happen. And you see it's $350 billion going out, and that's how you can get $50 billion forced over on your end. As much as I don't like Donald Trump, as much as I think he's a no-good bastard and all of that, just on a pure business level, on a nationalistic business level, you can come up financially if you know what you're doing in business under the insane rule and reign of Donald Trump. Some of the policies of the Republicans, though they're repugnant in many ways when it comes to business, if you're savvy, you can make economic progress, probably better than in many instances sometimes under the Democrats. I hate, some of y'all hate to hear that, but I mean, what I'm trying to say is right now, strong economic policies and advocates can make progress even when they're dealing with their enemy, because it's just about business right about now.
And I think, just to follow up on that point, because it's really important when you're talking about policy, because policy is something that you construct. And because you construct it, it's something that is done in, as you're saying, in an organized fashion. And what we see in this moment is how unorganized we were to have as you said, we don't even have an alignment of the institutions that would have, even if they don't have a policy, at least have the decency to have the advocacy to say, I'm aware enough that most of the businesses within our community are sole proprietorship. So we don't have that. But because this initiative that you're taking, and for us, and I'm saying to the Time for Awakening audience, it seems that for us at the quote unquote right here on the ground, we have to recognize that we have to formulate and advocate for a specific type of policy. And as you say, then politically get the response for that policy. But if you have no policy and you don't have no advocates like institutions, whether it be the Urban League or the Black preachers or the politicians, then you have to do that yourself. Would that be a fair statement?
That is more than fair. You know, the question is, my brothers and sisters who are listening, who represents the Black small business person? And who represents the Black entrepreneur in this country? And so if we can't answer that question, then we must answer. And so what this is here, and in the nationalistic concept, we must understand that Marcus Garvey, almost a century ago, gained great traction, which was had to be a radical doctrine in his day, Black nationalism. He did it on a cultural economic appeal. And so, and he comes on the heels of Booker T. Washington, who made progress with an economic appeal. So what we're saying right now is despair not at the deficiencies of necessarily civil rights, democratic tied leadership. They weren't taught this teaching that we're taught. Today, somebody must come forth, and a group, a coalition, must come forth to represent the Black economic empowerment movement. We must have a Black economic empowerment movement. So all I'm saying is that all the forces that are in our coalition and under our command that are carrying out the national sanctions campaign this summer and carrying out what we call the Buy Black offenses, we're reaching our hands out now, saying to our fellow brothers and sisters who are Garveyites and who are in the economics, here we are. We're here. We can shape policy together. Our hands are out to all of those who believe in the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and the Black Muslim way of doing business and want to return to those days. We're here to say, look, our hands here at Black Empowerment, we're competent business people. We're fighting for the Black economy. Our hands are reaching out. Black clergy, we might say y'all failed drastically under coronavirus, but in order not to be incessantly negative, we still could say, Black church, can't you see now that we were in a ditch, we need to come together and make the Black economy a top priority. We're here. Let us talk. Let's negotiate so we can form some policy. You know, I think that's where we are in the stage of empowerment. We're trying to We're fighting hard with our forces, but we're not under no illusion that we're going to need others. We haven't given up hope, and we don't want anybody else to give up hope.
Attorney Shabazz, let me go back to something that that Richard introduced and that you were just talking about, because I think it shows an inherent problem that we talk about it a lot on this program, but it's something, you know, our people can walk and chew gum. You know, we can do several things at once. It's something that we really have to work on that has become an impediment to us. And this virus, this pandemic has really accentuated it, is the failure of Black leadership. To me, leadership comes into play when you have some type of adversity, when the people need to be guided through a minefield. Now, Black leadership had failed to help Black people control the economy of their communities, because they allow, by and large, a lot of these other business entities to come in and take economic control of Black communities. But this pandemic has accentuated that Black businesses, I mean, our people are in all types of business, but the backbone, and this is just me as a businessman here in Philadelphia, the backbone of Black businesses here that I've come to understand, you've got a lot of our people in the restaurant business, and a lot of our people historically has been in the barber and beauty business. And for Black politicians to, through these stimulus packages, the $350 billion that you've seen that the Los Angeles Lakers and Harvard University and all of them went in and took money out of, and then they had another one, I think it was $450 billion, for all this stimulus money to have gone out, and the overwhelming majority of black businesses in all of these cities sitting there waiting, myself included. I've been in business in this city here in Philadelphia almost 20 years. And I applied for stimulus money when it first happened with three different entities, including SBA. No stimulus money. So when you got black businesses that don't have stimulus and the historic black businesses in all these cities, to me, that shows a utter failure of black leadership, even to address it. Some of these black leaderships get on a lot of these programs here in this city, and they have no answers, and they're supposed to have answers. Now, I want you to speak to that issue, but here's another one dealing directly to what you're talking about. Here in Philadelphia, I don't know whether it's different in some of the other cities. Some of our listening audience can call in from other cities. But here in Philadelphia, they had, just like in other cities, they had rules during this pandemic for stay at home, social distance, and things of that nature. And businesses was closed, especially in our neighborhoods. I'm one of them, been closed since March 16th. But you had other nationalities, Latinos, and especially Asians, that have been doing business all during this pandemic. And black elected officials here in Philadelphia has made that possible. These Asian stop and goes, I didn't realize, and I'm saying this with tongue planted firmly in my cheek, I didn't realize that selling 40s and fortified liquor and blunts and these salted chicken wings and other questionable meats is an essential business. But these businesses has been open in the community and open during the pandemic. No social distancing, no curbside pickup. You go right in there and purchase what you've been purchasing before the pandemic. And they made this situation possible. I've called the city hall on several occasions about several of these stores. I go into neighborhoods, copy down the addresses, and report them. And they tell me the same thing. Well, if they're not social distancing, you can report them, but they are allowed to be open. And I know they're allowed to be open because these elected officials have made it possible for those businesses to be open. Now, and I'm saying this because I want to get your opinion as an activist and an organizer. We have to.
Okay.
We have a chore to organize our people, to understand that we're in a battle and a fight. But sometimes we're going to have to organize. And not sometimes. We're going to have to organize to get these people out from in front of our people. They have been a detriment and an impediment. And some of these black elected officials, a majority of them, need to be removed. We need to cultivate leadership among our people to be able to take our people to the next step. Speak to that issue as an organizer.
Thank you. Thank you so much. That's like throwing a fastball down the pike.
Because simply
what it is, my brothers, when you try to do it all of the ways of a gentleman and address it up to City Hall, and they basically told you that they weren't going to do anything about it, the so-called elected officials. So now the unelected officials, but those that have been elected by the people, have to shut it down where the city say they won't shut it down. We just simply have to go and shut it down. And I guarantee you, when you get out there and you shut it down, and in them store, the Asians get to calling, or the Arabs, or the whoever it is up in there, the Hindu, the Sikh, the Freak, the Greek, any one of them, when they get to calling and hollering the city hall and the police, Captain Precinct and all of that, then things start changing. We have our own inspection team now in several cities that when the city won't inspect, we come out and do the inspections ourselves and pursue the inspections and the process when they're doing this. But just like in Alabama, with what we did on the 19th in Alabama, I mean, we just bring it to a halt, brother. You know, that's what you got to do. And when you bring it to the halt, then the Asian Chamber of Commerce starts hollering at the mayor and the city council, and then things start changing. You just got to keep the pressure on. So all I'm saying to those, we're not saying we have a magic solution to this. But what we are saying was the actual fact that you have some experienced activists who are very business savvy, and we will give out a number here. And if you have problems like you have right now in Philadelphia, if you will work with us, we will work with you. And if you are committed to the long haul, to holding, as King Rick of the original Black Panther say in Milwaukee, holding people accountable, then we will supply forces. We will supply troops that can, that are looking to shut these places down, that are looking to be active in the field, and are looking to make it very, very uncomfortable for foreign interests to just sell anything to do in our community. You have. If you'll work with us, we'll work with you. And with Hashim Nzinga, who's the chairman of the new Black Panther Party, who's growing in strength every day, and black people growing in more militancy every day. I'm here to tell you, brother, I've seen great progress with the sanctions campaign. The sanctions campaign. When I went to New York to shut down Red Star Restaurant, and I saw 60 police officers show up all of a sudden, just to prevent this one little Chinese restaurant from being shut down. I said, you know, this economic thing here is serious. I said, when you step on these economic buttons, you stepping on some buttons. But let you know, we're undaunted. We'll be back in New York on May 30th, but we're not just going to be in one restaurant. We're going to be at 10 of them. And we got legal training, and we have all our permits and everything, and we're not going to back down. And so, brother, there's hope, man. We're tired of people pushing us around and politicians ignoring us. It's time that we amp up the pressure. Forget complaining about the existing leadership or the past leadership. The new leadership right here can come to birthright as we speak.
You know, before we take a break, I want to, I see on the line here, we got one of the hosts here on Time for an Awakening Media. He has a program on Monday evenings. He also has a program on terrestrial radio here in the city of Philadelphia, and he's an organizer here. Brother Jihad Ahmed, he does the program Acres of Diamonds. He's with us. I was with Brother Jihad on several occasions when he had the 10,000 Fearless that he was trying to organize here in Philadelphia, not trying to, doing it, along with Captain Dennis. I want to bring him in on the conversation. Brother Jihad.
Hey, good evening, brothers. Good evening. Welcome. I'm happy to be with you guys tonight.
How are you, sir?
All right. Yes, sir.
I wanted to bring you in on the conversation because Brother Malik was talking about organizing, and I know that you're out there in the street all the time. I seen you out there a couple weeks ago when you was delivering soup beans to some of the people that needed food. Talk about some of the things that we've been talking about this evening, what you see when you go on the streets.
You know, I, myself, working in law enforcement and driving throughout the city of Philadelphia, I'm amazed, as our brother has mentioned, as you have mentioned, Brother Elliot, all of the steak and takes, Arab restaurants, grocery stores, all these places are open. But I don't see no black barbershops open. No type of stores that we may own in our community that service us that are open. None of them. All of the stores that I see that are open in our community are being owned and operated by those who have no real connection to us outside of making a dollar off of us. So what we begin to do in the hood, that I like to say, we begin to put the food programs together to help the seniors, to help the people that are less fortunate right now and be able to get some meats, ground beef, turkey, chicken, produce, potatoes, onion, fruit. We've been able to mobilize, and we have another feeding coming up here in Philadelphia outside of my where I do my podcast studio, my show at my studio. We going to give out food, man. Last Sunday, we gave out 85 boxes of food. And the people were just coming in droves. They were pulling up in cars. I felt so bad, man. We had nothing left to give the people that were pulling up. In less than an hour, boxes of food and meats and waters were gone. We made intentions to start at 12 o'clock. We started at 12. By 1 o'clock, everything was gone. 75 boxes of food. So these are the type of things that, you know, we as a community have to continue to do, because if we're waiting for City Hall to do it, they're not going to do it. We're waiting for Donald Trump to do it. He's not going to do it. We got to go back to the old teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and do for self.
That's right.
Really seriously do for self. Now, Brother Elliot, I don't want your business to get shut down or anything, but it's a shame that your business wasn't up being able to service the people in the community. It's taking money out of your pocket, and let's just say you lose your clientele and they decide to go somewhere else. Then where does that put you? There was no stimulus money allocated for you. It's none. Now, I heard that basketball player Magic Johnson had pulled together millions of dollars to help businesses that were suffering, African American, women of color, their businesses. I don't know how accurate it is, but I heard it on the Black station here in Philadelphia. So those are the things that we need, man, in our community to help us, because nobody's going to give us a damn thing.
Well, listen.
Okay.
Stay with us on the line, Brother Jihad, and I'm gonna bring you back in. Just hang around with us, Brother Malik. Before we're gonna take a break, and when we come back, it's a bunch of calls on the line here, and I'm gonna bring the callers in, and then I want you to talk about some of the other programs that's gonna be going on, that's starting at the end of this month and carrying through the summer. We're going to take a brief break here, and you can get involved in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. We're in conversation with attorney, organizer, and founder of Black Lawyers for Justice, Brother Malik Zulu Shabazz. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening, Time for an Awakening, with host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
I think you'll find, sir, that there will come a time when black people wake up and become intellectually independent enough to think for themselves. As other humans are intellectually independent enough to think for themselves, then the black man will think like a black man, and he will feel for other black people. And this new thinking and feeling will cause black people to stick together. And then at that point, you'll have a situation where when you attack one black man, you are attacking all black men. And this type of black thinking will cause all black people to stick together. And this type of thinking also will bring an end to the brutality inflicted upon black people by white people. And it is the only thing
that would bring an end to it. No federal court, state court, or city court will bring an end to it. It's something that the black man has to bring an end to himself.
Preachers and leaders, you administrators, you teachers, you leaders, you are the worst. No cowardly, punctified leader will lead this new generation of young black men and women. Your day of leading them is finished. You can't feel it? When you talk to young people, you can't feel that you're missing them? Parents, you can't feel when you're talking to your children that this is a new generation and they don't want to hear your compromising talk? Did you hear them in Ferguson tell Jesse, get the hell out of here? You ain't no leader. I was hurting for my brother because Jesse worked hard for our people. But time has moved on. And what was good yesterday ain't no good at all today. So either you become a new vessel so that new wine can be poured into the old wine. For your day of leading our people is over, and it will never come back to you again.
Damn it, we're still in the land of our bondage. We're still in the land of captivity. We're still a slave to the Democratic Party. Still a slave to the Republican Party. You can't even see a Freedom Party. You don't see it. You're a slave. I'm a slave. And unless we admit that we are slaves, then we can never get free. Never get free.
Put the present Democratic administration in Washington, D.C. The whites were evenly divided. It was the fact that you threw 80% of your votes behind the Democrats that put the Democrats in the White House. When you see this, you can see that the Negro vote is the key factor. And despite the fact that you are in a position to be the determining factor, what do you get out of it? The Democrats have been in Washington, D.C. only because of the Negro vote. They've been down there 4 years, and all other legislation they wanted to bring up, they brought it up and gotten it out of the way, and now they bring up you. And now they bring up you. You put them first, and they put you last, because you're a chump. A political chump. Thank you.
down so you could see that the government of America has been planning our demise. Any members of Congress here, any members of the civil rights movement that are here, you love this nation. You've suffered every indignity to make America better, that she might be great. And every time you forced her to make a law that was in our favor, they came right behind that law with skill and chicanery to make the law of non-effect.
When it came to treating the citizens of African descent fairly, America failed. She put them in chains. The government put them on slave quarters, put them on auction blocks, put them in cotton fields, put them in inferior schools, put them in substandard housing, put them in scientific experiments, put them in the lowest paying jobs, put them outside the equal protection of the law, kept them out of their racist bastions of higher education, and locked them into positions of hopelessness and helplessness. The government gives them the drugs, builds bigger prisons, passes a three-strike law, and then wants us to sing God Bless America? No, no, no. Not God Bless America. God damn America, that's in the Bible, for killing innocent people. God damn America for treating her citizens as less than human. God damn America, as long as she tries to act like she is God and she is supreme.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. It's 8:12 here in the city of Philadelphia, and we're in the Sunday edition of Time for an Awakening. Our guest this evening, attorney, organizer, and founder of Black Lawyers for Justice, Brother Malik Zulu Shabazz. And you can join the conversation, too, by dialing 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. And we got several callers on the line.
Hey, Ellie, before you go to the callers. Could I ask Brother Shabazz to go over again those five black offensives, if I got that right?
Brother Malik?
Five black offenses, you say?
I thought you said, did you have offensives? You know,
by black. Yes, sir.
Yeah, by black, excuse me.
The by black, I call it, a by black campaign offensive. Mm-hmm. You know, when they had, in the World War II, there's a Pacific campaign offensive, the European campaign offensive. We're using military terms here, and they signify the seriousness of our operation and the seriousness of those who are in the operation. And therefore, an offensive means that we're going all out on the streets, boots on the ground, to achieve our objective. And we're moving beyond the level of complaining or analyzing about our problems. In brief, this has a historical references. At a point in time in the 1960s, our movement evolved beyond civil rights, and black power became the leading force, as Stokely Carmichael hollered it out. This represented an advanced level of organizing by SNCC, which later trained the Black Panther forces. And by the time of the untimely assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King, the Black Panther Party was the leading political force in America, and they were known for taking action. They were known for putting into action what Malcolm prophesied with the word. And they were effective in terms of self-defense and organizing and defiance and community service and programs, and they were also destroyed. What I'm saying here, brother, to answer your question about this Buy Black offensive is that we are now in the time, this time right now, is the time of fulfillment. Minister Louis Farrakhan has preached and warned akin to a prophet for several decades, and he has clearly been a master articulator of the complaint, an outliner of the problem. He's even given us a theory of the solution, and at sometimes, even with his power program, he gave us a hint of just how strong an economic movement could be. Minister Malcolm X, who we just heard, is like a prophet. He has outlined, of course, the hypocrisy and the wrongs of America and where we needed to be headed, but he is a martyr. He was assassinated. Huey Newton was assassinated. Here in this day and time, my brother, I'm humbly here to say that we're going to consider Panther Power in the near future, that there is a group here on the scene here. One of them on this phone, I am a student of Khalid Abdul Muhammad, who passed as the national chairman of the new Black Panther Party. And we are here, we are saying that we are of right age and of right stage to fulfill that which we have just heard preached and to put it into action and to turn complaints into a higher level of satisfaction. In this day and time, that's one thing I want to promise, that it is the Panther time now. And I'm here to tell you that that Panther is not just confined to an indoor arena or confined to a restricted environment. That Black Panther, though it can't solve all the problems we need solved in the streets, there's a lot to be solved. Oh, but I'm here to tell you that you're going to see now, I'm going to prophesize here, that over the next 12 months, you're going to see the Panther power on the streets change much of the street equation. That's one thing. Number two is my pitch here is for W.E.B. Du Bois and Minister Farrakhan, when he was building the power program, to show he was on the right track at that point on that. When he called, he used to say that the Black middle class is the head, and that the Black masses that he was preaching in front of did not have a Black head. W.E.B. Du Bois talks to us about the talented 10. Marcus Garvey was a genius, but he had incompetent robbers managing his program. I, attorney Malik Zulu Shabazz, graduate of Howard University School of Law, from a family of accomplished business persons, and here, a competent, established businessman himself, I'm talking here now to the Black middle class. I'm talking here to the Black economist, to the PhD, to the doctor, to the administrator, to the person who is qualified and knows about medical services and nursing services and so forth. I'm talking to the educated and the learned amongst us to tell us that right now, we can make the critical difference right now, that the masses of the people will move any way we want to move. But where is the Black intellectual? Where is the Black middle class? Where is the Black engineer, the Black doctor? Where is the scientist? Where is the evidence that they're working together? All I'm saying is here, look, if you say you Black bougie, you Black middle class, but you love your people, but damn it, I want to talk to you too. I want to talk to you, too, in your middle-class neighborhood with your Mercedes-Benz and your Rolls-Royce to tell you that we're not mad at you for having a Mercedes-Benz and a Rolls-Royce. Just use it as an operation military vehicle to free our people. And call me. I'm at 202. Text me. I'm at 202-875-9623. 875-9623. I have a nice home. I have nice things that I have earned and labored with over the years, despite being hated by this enemy. But I'm here to tell you that I'm not satisfied, and you shouldn't be satisfied till every Black man and Black woman has more. And I want to talk to you, middle class down to grassroots. That's all. I hate to go on so long, brother, but I had to get that out. after hearing all that good preaching you just played.
Let's go. Richard, you, yes. You follow up or did you
no, no, that's
just
good.
Move
no,
on? That's good. Okay, good. Let's go to some of these calls here that's been sitting online. Our first caller. Caller, what's your name? Where you calling from? Caller, are you there? Let's put them back on hold. He might have stepped away. Let's go to Toronto. 647-647. Toronto? Can you hear me? Let's put them on hold. Let's go to 215. 215?
Good evening, Brother Elliot. How you doing, my brother?
How are you, sir?
I'm doing. How you doing, Brother Richard?
I'm all right. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. I praise be to God to my dear brother, Brother Malik Shabazz. Brother Shabazz, I want to say to you and Brother Jihad, if Brother Jihad still listen, Assalamu alaikum and Ed Mubarak to your beautiful brothers and stuff. And how you doing today, dear brother?
Kareem, walaikum salam. It's a black power back to me, brother.
Thanks, Brother Malik. I just want to say to you, brother, it's an honor to talk to you tonight. And, you know, like you, brother Malik, I'm like, I treat all people with respect, but like you said, respect is something that it gotta be a two-way street. I have nothing against our Asian brothers and sisters or our Arab brothers, but they have to treat our people with respect, because too often, as you know, Brother Malik, you as a well-learned brother who done traveled around the world and around this country, too often people of color of other countries, they come in, just like even some of our people, even from the cop, they come in here with that attitude where they think they can just disrespect black people because they adopt that European central mentality where they think they can treat black people like they less than human beings, sell you rotten food, talk to you like you less than human. And that's why I applaud you, Brother Malik, for doing what you're doing, and went to the Chinese embassy to let our Chinese brother and sister know, look, you know, we ain't got nothing against you, but you have to go stop that. You have to stop mistreating our people over there in China. Here you over there in Africa, you know, over there with our people's jewels and resources, you had the audacity to mistreat our people right there in China. No, we're going to put an end to that stuff. And I applaud you, Brother Malik, and may Allah continue to bless you to keep doing what you're doing, the brothers and sisters like you to keep doing what you're doing, because, again, this disrespect from other cultures, this stuff got to stop, and y'all brothers, y'all doing the right thing, y'all taking the right lead, and stopping this kind of foolishness and stuff. That's the only way it's going to stop, when brothers like us and sisters put a stop to it. And I applaud y'all for doing what you're doing. And you know, Brother Malik, when Brother Jihad was talking to just now a few minutes ago, I feel just what Brother Jihad was saying, because I feel for Brother Elliot too, because like I said, Brother Elliot is a businessman, and like when Brother Elliot was explaining to you about how these Asian stopping goes and Chinese restaurants was allowed to remain open during the pandemic, and many times you could go past from here in Philadelphia, I'm sure all across the country and stuff, people wasn't social distance, they were still allowed to go in there and buy alcohol, shots, Lucy's, drinking 40s, all this congregating outside these stop and goes. And as you know, Brother Malik, many of them don't have no kind of bathroom facilities. Now people in their weakened state, they drinking that stuff out there, urinating and defecating all that out in front of these places. This stuff been going on before the pandemic. It's going on during the pandemic, even after the pandemic. I mean, it'll be going on after the pandemic without people's mindset. So I'm saying to myself, again, our failed black leadership is why brothers like Brother Elliot Benesis and other brothers like him are suffering, because I'm saying to myself, if you can go and advocate for Asians to sell poisons to your people and people that's going in that social distance, they're not wearing masks or gloves or whatever, but you can't advocate for a brother or sister who got families, but they got bills to pay. You can't advocate for them to keep their barbershops and salons open when all they have to do is wear gloves and masks and stuff. So I'm saying to myself, if people that go in them stop and goes and going to Chinese restaurants don't have masks and gloves, and that's okay, why shouldn't black barbers and black salons allowed to open up and stuff? They can take social measures and stuff to make sure that everybody's safe. But you consider what these Asians doing as far as selling their alcohol and all that food, you consider that essential, but you don't consider a brother or sister, they got a barbershop or salon, you don't consider that essential, right? But yet these people, even with the barbershops being closed, Brother Malik, they still got to pay the rent. You know what I mean? And that's what Brother Jihad was Indeed. Understand, because I feel for these brothers, man. These brothers, they are hurting many black businesses. I don't know, after this thing is over with, I don't know if some of these black barbershops and salons are going to be able to recover from this, because they're losing a lot of money. They may lose their clientele, like Brother Jahad was saying. So I just ask you, Brother Malik, to speak to that, and I'll get off and put me on mute, and I'll listen to the rest of the show. But may Allah continue to bless you, Brother Malik. I love you, my brother. You're a strong warrior, and you keep doing what you're doing, my brother. As-salamu alaykum.
Walaikum salam. Man, brother, you touched me with what you say, brother, and I want you to text me at 202-875-9623. 202-875-9623, brother, because I feel, I'm feeling your spirit, and I feel the pain. And I feel the pain right now of black business people. And I feel the pain of what I saw on TV, where they said that by the end of the year, as a result of COVID-19, as the end of the year, that 45% of black small businesses, which is all black business pretty much, that 45% of them are not going to make it. And so, therefore, that just raises the alarm cry even more that we must have a black economic empowerment movement. We must have one. Because somebody got to go back to the United States government and get another $500 billion just for black business. Whatever this was giving up shows that they got the money. But somebody got to be strong enough and go back and get $500 billion just for black people. You know what I mean? And then when Joe Biden says that, then y'all can go out and vote for him. He promises and signs a guaranteed contract with a notary that he's finna give up $500 billion just for black small business to remedy the coronavirus. Then we can get over this drastic, not-so-innocent mistake he just made. So what am I saying here, brother? You know, we got a long fight. It's a hell of a fight, man. It's a painful fight, but it's a fight we got to fight. Right now, everybody got to fight for the black small business person and for the black family to be able to make it out of this. And so our website is black-empowerment.org. Black-empowerment.org. You'll see the results of May 19th on there. And I think by tomorrow, you'll see our campaign for May 30th. We're saying May 30th is National Black Saturday. May 30th. On Black Saturday, May 30th, we want no one to buy from any non-black business. Whether it's Safeway, Walmart, the local Asian store, Chinese store, nobody, if they're not black, should get a dime. It's a national stay-at-home order. We're going to enforce it on the streets by shutting down certain Chinese and Asian merchants. And some Walmarts and supermarkets are going to be targeted that day. We had great success on the 19th, great success, and there's going to be more success. All around campaigning, raising the issues in this campaign that black business and the small black business person is of top importance, and that we must stop spending money with our oppressors. And for other black business matters that we need to take care of, such as helping brothers and sisters, black-empowerment.com, or the email is info@black-empowerment.com. It's both .com and .org.
Okay. Brother Malik, .com
and .org. We're trying to. We're not nowhere near where we could be, but we want to really establish a national black economic empowerment network. Some people's into the boycott shutdowns. Other people not into that. But you might be, whatever you are. You about employing and hiring black people and getting some money from black people. If you're even talking about forcing this government to give up some more billion specifically for black business, you know, that can be done. Donald Trump is in an election. He is, even if he is the devil, and he is in an election. Honorable Elijah Muhammad said you can force the devil to do what you want him to do. You know, so don't think that there's not some more money that they've already stolen from us and didn't give us that you can't go back and force them to get in an election year if organized. And if we're just not going to bend over and give it up to the Democratic Party just to do it as usual.
Well, Malik, you still got a little time to stay with us?
Yes, sir.
Good, because we got a full board here. Go ahead, Richard. You want to say something?
No, I wanted to echo something that you said, Brother Sebastian, because, you know, the other day when they, Charlemagne had the discussion with Biden, I seen this article that came out of, it was The Village, and the U.S. Black Chamber of Commerce called him in on this exchange about what Biden said. And I don't even think about this here. Then you ain't black, right? To the point that you're making, the U.S. Black Chamber of Commerce can come out to respond to that. But as we mentioned, when it gets to those trillions or $300 billion or whatever that was, that, and we know that we needed a targeted amount to go to specifically black businesses. Maybe y'all heard it because I didn't. Did you hear anything about a U.S. Black Chamber of Commerce making any
kind? First I've heard of.
and it's not that, you know, because, you know, and as you say, this and I'm emphasizing the need for a policy shift, but also the need for, as you're advocating and asking us to be supportive in relationship to organizing around new institution building, right? Because obviously institutions that are in place are missing something. I don't want to be negative to them. They sleep on the wheel, or they're getting something. Because when I look at that Lift Every Voice and Sing pledge that Biden made, one thing that was interesting, that even in his article, it says funding for entrepreneurs and businesses staffed exclusively by the owners and handful of employees, as well as $70 billion for HBCUs. If this is a policy, see, I'm concerned, just like the first initiative, when they said small businesses, that was for businesses with 500 employees or more.
Or less,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
That has nothing to do with black businesses. 500 employees. We would love to have businesses with five. Am I wrong? Am I missing something here?
No.
I mean, most of our businesses have numbers of employees that are under five, mm-hmm. not just 500.
You know what I mean? You know, but there is a segment that is making a political thrust within the political community, and you raise the call for those in that black middle class, because we know that there is black executives that has PACs. We know there's black PACs, and we should be coordinating together to make policies that work for the black community. And that's what I wanted to emphasize as you make this call, that because you're asking all to be involved in this, right? From the boots on the ground to formators, to the entrepreneurs that are already, that have political persuasion in one party or the other, that we have to look out after the black community, because if we don't, we see that we're dying actually. Right?
That's a broad-based message. And that message right now is very broad-based amongst all party lines, demographic lines, and even class lines. You know, right now, it could safely be stated that all 50 million are drastically concerned about their economic future. So this is a great time for diplomatic initiatives and for us to talk. We need to talk with each other, you know, and talk to the non-traditional people we may not have talked to. So I want to say for you all, and you all are very influential, Brother Elliot, Richard, I thank you for having me on. And you all, I mean, it's like in your circles, you can pass on my information and let them know what we're doing, because we're black empowerment. It's like a theory. It's a network. And I mean, when we say buy black offensive, we mean that we're willing to talk with anybody amongst our people about improving our condition. You know, that's the main thing right now. And there's one other announcement I want to make. On Monday night, we have an institution opening. It's our online university. We call it Pan-African University of Black Excellence. It's online, and it's ShabazzUniversity.com. It's opening on African Liberation Day tomorrow at 6 p.m. Eastern. ShabazzUniversity.com. You can go there now and see it, but it's going to be unveiled tomorrow. All of the classes, all of the courses, the certification courses, the library, as we're opening up an institutional venture to show that we can educate ourselves. We'll talk all about it tomorrow. And I have Dr. Trinity Amoon, who's an excellent director. Dr. Trinity Amoon will lead the discussion tomorrow. ShabazzUniversity.com. Learning, we're going to be teaching and learning that which the Western and the white education system does not and will not teach us. But these are practical and informative classes on our way to accreditation, but right now offering practical classes, certification courses that can help us to do business and to know who we are. And I want y'all to tune in. ShabazzUniversity.com. Thank y'all so much for letting me announce that.
And we'll do it again a couple more times before you leave tonight. Let's go to, let's kind of move and go to tip, question or comment for our guest, 215-215.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, excellent show. Assalamu alaikum, Brother Shabazz. I'm glad you're taking that initiative. I've been saying this for a long time. If you ain't going to put your finger on the trigger of a gun and shoot them down, then put your finger on the trigger of your dollar and shut them down. And this is a good time, man, for unity. And I'm down, man. Shut them down, man. Shut them down. And I wish that it could have been a movement after the first Million Man March. Boycott these holidays, you know, starting with Misgiving, the day after Misgiving with Negroes out the shopping mall, White Friday, Christmas, New Year's. Shut them all down, Easter, every last one of them, man. We boycott their holidays, man. Like a Million Man March put it was a day of absence. Let's have a day of absence with these damn holidays. Down to the malls and stuff. And just long as I've been living, it was a Chinese restaurant down my old neighborhood, 22nd Austin. I never saw Chinese people in there buying food. That's us.
Right.
That's us. You don't see Dominicans in these stores. Ain't enough Dominicans, you know, to keep all these stores open. Same thing with the Koreans. I don't see Koreans going to the Stop and Go's buying stuff. You know, and these Negro politicians, brother, they need to pass a bill to shut these damn Stop and Go's down completely. Cause just like I was telling you, there's no Afro-American community. You got 21st century Negro reservation. And just like on that reservation, the devil gave the Indian firewater, they give us firewater with the damn 40s and stuff, killing ourselves. And it just got to stop, man. Somebody got to take the initiative to shut this. I mean, shut them down, man. I don't have no mercy on them, brother. They don't have no mercy on us.
What city are you calling from?
Philadelphia, brother.
You know, I'm getting a lot of good calls. I mean, look, hey, my text is 202-875-9623. I have a lot of respect for the city of Philadelphia. Khalid Muhammad had a lot of respect for the brothers and sisters in Philly. This is Malik Zulu Shabazz. If I feel your spirit, and I know you want that kind of action.
Oh yeah, look, I got pictures of us together. We was at the Church of the Advocate with Dr. Khalid. This is back in the spring of '98. Yeah,
man. I got pictures. Good, man. I'm happy to relink with you. I'm happy. Man, text me so we can link because we will come and help get going in Philadelphia. If y'all believe some businesses need to be punished, trust me, we'll come from Washington, D.C. and Baltimore and we'll help. And we're not trying to be pussy. You ain't got to be a Black Panther or none of that. As long as you for ending this problem, you contact us and we're going to figure out how to get to your city. We may help you on May 30th. Do y'all really want to get down and they keep complaining about this store here? We may have to make an example of somebody on the 30th. We may have to dispatch would dispatch some people out of D.C. just to handle Philadelphia.
Okay.
Brother?
Yeah, because I keep telling people the China today is not the China under Mao Zedong. They're more capitalist. And see, you're dealing with a bunch of economic vampires, number one in America. And she done bit the Chinese, the Dominicans, the Koreans, the Arabs, and now all of them are after the bloody afters are down. That's what keep them going. And there's nowhere in the world a Korean could travel thousands of miles and know to set up shop in the black community. No way. These Negro politicians work with these bad, bring them in here. And I remember back in 1975, I walked through City Hall, there was a big limousine. Ali limousine came, these Asians. And around 75, when they started popping up in the black community. Matter of fact, right after Elijah Muhammad died, they started popping up. We used to have, in Philadelphia, the Muslims had most of the steak shops, Shabazz Steak and Tea. Now the Arabs got them. And then I had to straighten the African out. They come over here talking this nonsense. Oh, you got lots of opportunity. You don't take. I said, look, let me tell you something. It wasn't for brothers and sisters, Afro-American, getting out on the street in the 50s and the 60s, fighting the firebomb. You wouldn't come over. You wouldn't be able to have no opportunities here. We made it possible for you. And I'll be damned if I'm going to let you come look down on me. The only reason why I'm over here is because your ancestors had a better hiding place than my ancestors. And all of them all is reparations, man. And I'm sick and tired. These Negro politicians, no more compromise, man. They got to go. My thing is just shut them down completely, man. You don't see no black people in Chinatown?
Did you get that number? You got the number?
Yeah.
Yes, sir. Let me say something to you. Brother, I appreciate your spirit. I'm looking forward to working with you. And let the word go forth. We should let the word go forth. I'm on Facebook, too. I'm at Malik Zulu Shabazz and Dr. Malik Zulu Shabazz. You can follow all of the latest right off that page. And the website is black-empowerment.org. Now, I say this is the perfect time. This is the time now when we should be really saying that the economic program of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad is our salvation and saving grace. We should be saying that it is right now, but we're going to have to modify to say that it must be, because right now we know that if the black Muslims, see, my grandfather was a black Muslim from the 50s, 60s, and 70s. He didn't have a college degree, but he was rolling with that briefcase every day, and he had him some land, some property, and even if he was down, he had a vision. He was rolling with the belief in Allah and the Honorable Master Elijah Muhammad, and doing for self. Now, on July 4th, we have a website that's opening. It's called blackmuslimbusiness.com. Blackmuslimbusiness.com. It's not religiously affiliated with any person, but it is for every brother or sister who believes in the economic program of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. So we have some who used to be in the Nation of Islam, who spent time with Imam Mujahideen Muhammad, but they respect the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and they are good businessmen, and they want to do business with other Muslims. You have others who are Muslims. Some are with Minister Farrakhan. Some are with Honorable Silas Muhammad. Some are with this. Some say they're not with any of them, but they're still with the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. We don't have a dispute with any of them. But we say that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was right and exact, that the black Muslims should do business together, should have Brother Jihad, should have markets together, online marketplace, bazaars, and that there should be brisk business amongst the Muslims. We all know that as black Muslims, when the coronavirus crisis came, we should have been number one with the mask. We should have been number one with the sanitizer. We should have been number one with all of that, but maybe we just got to do a little bit better. So all I'm saying is monitor this, blackmuslimbusiness.com, and there's a panel of experts and we'd like you to be involved in this panel of experts. You can still contact me because there's a panel of experts that know that real estate, know that development, and that want black Muslims to be able to trade with each other, trade with the Muslim world, and not just black Muslims, but who all of the lost found. Every brother or sister who respects the vision of Honorable Elijah Muhammad and his economic program, which is building a marketplace, a business training, business education, financial literacy, and a website here specifically so that the black Muslim can do what he was known for. He was an economic pioneer. He wasn't dependent on the white man for nothing. And so that's something else we're working on and not playing with. Just wanted to drop that.
Good. Let me grab a few of these calls. And well, you'll give that number again and the website again for our call out of Philadelphia. Let's go to 602. 602?
Yes. Good evening, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And good evening to your guest, Brother Marcus here.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing great, good brothers. Now, I got a statement and I'm going to ask a question.
Mm-hmm.
You know, during the 50s and the 60s, there was a brother by the name of Carlos Cooks. And he coined that phrase, he actually coined the phrase, the Buy Black Campaign, the 30 to 60 day movement. And the purpose of the movement, the way it worked was the black people would go out of the black community and buy their products. Go to the white community for 30 to 60 days, go buy the products in the white community, and what that would do, that would deprive the local business person, the alien business person in the black community, because in 30 to 60 days, they wouldn't be able to make their payroll, they wouldn't be able to pay the rent or whatever, and then they would move out of the black community, then we could take that over, because you know in really what happens is these people don't buy the product. You know, there is somebody that comes in and gives them the product, credit the product to them. The milkman come, he said, okay, I'll be here in 2 weeks or whatever, I'll come pick up the money. The bread man come, the egg man come. That's the way they operate. So these people don't actually go and buy the goods, they get credit. Now I want to ask a question, and I want to know, to what degree does the black consumer play a part in this? Because really, you know, we should take that ticket sign and knock that black consumer in the head, because it is the black consumer that go and purchase the stuff from these people. You see? And I can tell you from experience dealing with some of these Negroes. You go there with the sign, you pick it in the store, these Negroes come and tell you, shop where I want to shop. I spend my money where I want to spend my money. You know, I don't see no color. So I would ask the brothers, how do we deal with these black consumers, these traitors who go and give the money to these people who use it against us? And I'll just mute my phone and wait for the response. Thank you.
Thank you for your call.
Sir, man. Appreciate you. Appreciate you, brethren, for that passionate comment. First thing we have to do is we have a duty to give an alternative. We have a duty to at least present black people with some kind of alternative when we're going to tell them to not buy from non-black businesses. So, for example, I support WeBuyBlack.com. There's some Muslim brothers there. WeBuyBlack.com. I hear they're in the process of buying a black restaurant, and we're about to enter into some specific negotiations with them. On our website, black-empowerment.org and black-empowerment.com, we have a national black business directory it's there now, but it's being feverishly built. We have business contacts coming from all over the country. I'm hiring a new web team come tomorrow. We are ambitious. We say that within a few weeks that we are going to have the largest black business directory in America or the planet. That's our prediction. We're driving hard for that. under righteous competition. Black national and international black business directory on black-empowerment.org. So I say that, brother, to say we give them an alternative. Number two is we have to understand that a certain percent of our population, like when we're out on the sanctions line or the shutdown line or the boycott line, that some of our people are going to fight in us, and we have to just be firm. And we have to be firm. And, you know, you just have to deal with Negroes. You know, right now we're finding that 8 out of 10 blacks support our street boycotts or blackouts. We find that 9.9 out of 10 blacks support the black economic and black empowerment and do for self and buy black business campaign. So what we have to do, brother, is just keep the faith.
Okay.
I mean, you can tell black people anything. You can tell them that, you know, they're going to stand, some of us going to stand up for white folks, no matter what you say. They're going to always do something weak. Right now, it's got to be more of us that are strong and organized. And I'm still predicting, see, remember this, that Marcus Garvey and Elijah Muhammad had great success by specifically focusing on what we're talking about right now, that black economy and that black dollar. So I just say keep the faith, brother. And if you need help keeping the faith, I'm at 202-875-9623. 202-875-9623. I mean, hell, we're either in business or in organization or politics, you're going to have to put up with some stuff from our people. You're going to have to put up with some stuff. Well, guess what? For decades, myself, Hashim Benzinga, the other business people that's working with us, we didn't been around for a while and took a lot from black people for a long time. So we have herd immunity against Negroes. These Negroes can come with what they want to come with.
We are immune, and we've been inoculated against Negroes.
We know that they coming, man, and they're not going to break our spirit. They can't break our spirit, brother, because, you know, without us, who? Who? Without us, Brother Elliot, who? Who is going to do the job, you know? Malcolm, Farrakhan, they've all done their job. But now we must take it to a better level. We must take it to a higher level.
We got to
take the ball in the end zone. They done got us inside the 20.
Let me grab some more callers. Let's go to 404. 404? 404, are you there?
Hey, y'all hear me? Yeah, you hear me, Elliot?
Yes, sir.
I appreciate it, man. I've been on hold since Friday, man.
I'm sorry. I got to move a little rapidly to get these callers. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
Hey, well, man, I like what you're doing, man. But sometimes I'm going to tell y'all, man, right here, stay out of Georgia, man. Don't come to damn Georgia, man. I'm about going to go out to these 13 colleges, man. Okay? Them the main devils, man. Them damn 13 colleges. Georgia was started as a prison camp in 1735. So look here, man. Sometimes it's not good to telegraph our movement. I wouldn't have told them count them or nothing, bro. Okay? And let them feel it in the pocket. But when y'all get ready, bro, I'm ready to go in front of the Federal Reserve. We got a Federal Reserve right down here, man. It's a black dude skidding and grinning running the Federal Reserve, man. Okay? I just saw a special they showed here on the Federal Reserve. This nigga skidding and grinning, bro. Okay? It's time. I said, we hit this Federal Reserve, man. And we'll let them know, man. That's how money is that way, bro. So when y'all ready, I'm ready, man. I ain't fucking with the Chinese. I'm going at the Federal Reserve, bro. Okay? When y'all get ready, I'm ready. I'm right here. Okay? I'm right here in by God, redneck Georgia. OSHA know that.
You got
when y'all get ready.
You got the number? Did you get his number?
Yeah, I got it, man. I get it, man. Okay? But, hey OSHA, I mean, Elliot, I want to tell you something, Elliot. The vacuum will always be filled, man. Okay? So if you think they shutting down your barbershop, bro, you know, the vacuum going to get filled, man. Don't worry about it. Okay?
Yo, I'll be all right.
Hey, man. Hey, I know what we're doing. We can't be telegraphing all our moves all the time, man. We at war, bro. You ain't never seen Ali telegraph nail punch. especially Joe Frazier. But hey, bro, I'm ready to go out to the Federal Reserve. That's our money. See what happened? How this worked, man? I'm gonna say this. I'm gonna hang up, let somebody else talk. Keep me on hold, Elliot. But we went from 1619 to we all in state 2019, right? That's how 400 years up. And you see what the Most High did? He slapped them, he's cracking upside the head with his Colbert 19, bro. Okay? 1619 to 2019, Colbert 19, bro. See, that's a lesson for all of us to see, man. Okay? The Most High ain't playing, bro. It's our time, man. So, Elliot, keep your hold, bro.
All right. Thank you for your call.
Well, this caller has a great spirit. He has a great spirit. He just, I appreciate your spirit. And,
And say that number. Say that number again, brother.
There's a lot of problems. Can you hear me?
Yeah, say that number again for me.
202-875. Text. Don't call. Please text. 202-875-9623. 202-875-9623. That's for the Black Economic Empowerment Campaign. That's for the sanctions and shutdown on non-black businesses that we are putting in the streets on May 30th, all over the country. No shopping at non-black businesses of any kind. Also, if you're interested in black empowerment, you're interested in these business concepts, you're a serious business person, you like the business stuff I'm talking, please text 202-875-9623. If you want to be a new Black Panther, or one of the Black Panther groups that's part of our coalition, you're tired of seeing brothers like Aubrey assassinated, gunned down. You're tired of redneck whites in the South or the North, and you want to be a part of a Black self-defense group or a growing Black militia as they are seeking to increase their numbers to 10,000 Black militia and defense men around the country. You can still text 202-875-9623. Yo, this is a revolutionary radio show. We need to all get behind this. Seriously.
Let's go to
this show is like that. We need to push this all over the country.
Let's go to 917, New York City. 917. Are you there? I don't know what to, let's put them back on hold. Maybe just 917. Let's put them back on hold. Let's go to Durham, North Carolina. Breanne, are you there? We just lost her. Let's go to 501, Little Rock.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Wait a minute. You on a hands-free. Come pick up your receiver.
Okay, can you hear me better now?
I hear you. What's your name, bro?
Slum like a brother, Malik Zulu Jabbar.
Walaikum salam, sir.
Man, what's up, man? It's an honor to speak to you, brother. The General's Lieutenant, Oliver Khalid Abdul Muhammad. Oh, man, I was just on here listening to the show. I know I'm down here in Little Rock. Man, but let me just cut to the bait. It's an honor to speak to you. Boy, tears in my tearpots swell up in my eye, brother. It's an honor to be on the phone with you, brother. I follow you on Facebook. I'm going to tell you, I'll share this with you first, and then I get to a point, and then get off of y'all line. I come into contact with these teachers back in 1998-99. I was in the penitentiary. We had one cassette tape called The Goddamn White Man by the Honorable Khalid Abdul Muhammad. You familiar with that lecture?
Absolutely, 100%.
Okay. Now, I wrote my letter. I had never heard Mr. Farrakhan's voice, but I wrote my letter listening to that lecture at least once a week in the belly of the beast down here in Arkansas. And here I am. I'm still blessed. I'm thankful to be here. I've been through a lot. But let me just say this here, man. I'm down here in Little Rock, man. I wasn't even – look, let me say this again. I wasn't even intending. I was just going to listen in, you know. I'm looking forward to the Book of Kali coming out, dear brother. Please, please, please. When you push the date back a few times, brother. Last thing I commented on your Facebook page is when you talked about how even during this corona pandemic, Negroes still find the time to kill each other and stuff. Is that right? Remember that?
That's correct. Yes, sir.
And I was the one that posted on there and said, and slander as well. You dig what I'm saying? Because anytime you try to do anything in this side of work, brother, the slander's coming. But let me see. I really wasn't. I wanted to talk to you, Brother Malik, man, and I've got your number down. I wrote your number down because down here, man, you got the Asians, the Chinese, the Koreans. Over in one side of our town, if it wasn't for the Mexican and the Hispanic brothers, Little Rock, Southwest Little Rock would be like a ghost town if it wasn't for the Mexican brothers. And it's like, it seems like this local government makes it easier for these foreigners to come in and set up shop in our community, brother. They send code enforcement all around, brother. This fight is deep. They send code enforcement around to make sure we in compliance with code. But I was in South Dallas a couple of months ago, and I'm looking around and stuff. They let them set up chicken joints. If you go in there, they ain't got sitting chairs. They got broke tables. I mean, you just look back there, it's filthy and nasty. Mm-hmm. They let the Arabs set up shop, sell chicken $2, two piece for $1, right there in Black South Dallas, man. And they let them get away with murder. So what are we going to do about these code? We got the code enforcement that we got to factor into this, too. You see what I'm saying? So we got to be in compliance with this when we go to setting up our businesses. But I really didn't have no question. I was just listening. Well, I went on your page and I saw the thing and I pushed the page and then you guys came on.
Well, what's your name, brother?
Sir?
What's your name?
All right.
Say that again.
What is my name?
Yeah.
I'm Bro Freddie.
Well, Freddie, listen.
B-R-O-Freddie.
Well, listen.
F-R-E-D-D-I-E.
Well, Freddie, yes, listen. Sir. In the future, when you call the program, 215-490-9832, it's almost like.
Say that number again.
215-490-9832. I'll give you an example.
9832?
Yeah. When you call that number and we have a guest on, it's just like you're on a baseball team and you're sitting in the dugout. At any time, manager going to call you, and you're supposed to have the bat ready now. You can't sit on the line, and I push the button, and you don't say nothing. I want you to do what you did.
Yes, sir.
You was ready to take your swing. You know what I mean?
Yes, sir.
you're breaking up now, Freddie.
All right. Can you hear me better now?
Yeah, I hear you.
And I leave you with this. I'm glued to the phone because we got a brother like Malik and myself as well. It's like some of us, you know, we have a bad rep because we don't go along to get along. We're our own man, and we stand on our right to have the right to think, feel, and believe as we think, feel, and believe. And just I agree to disagree with anybody. Man, I'm just so happy. I got your text number down, Brother Malik. This Bro Freddie down here, Little Rock, brother. And it's a lot of money down here, brother. It's a lot of empty down here. Excuse me, I think it's my cheeks that are hitting the phone. But it's a lot of businesses down here. Dr. Umar Johnson come down here. I wish you would have chose to pick a school down here because I'm talking about anything that come down here, brother, it's going to blossom. We got good farmland down here. You got cheap lots. We can buy lots, turn into community gardens. Man, we really mean it's the big fields away to Wild and Woke Man, Malik. Brother, and I'm just saying, when I call, when I text, it's going to be Brother Freddie. Probably ain't nobody else going to call you from the whole damn state down here. But I'm on record. I said, yeah, I don't want to necessarily have people come in from Baltimore and other places to come do our work. You know, I'm willing to do the footwork, but brother down here,
well, let me say something to you.
This struggle. Go ahead, sir.
Thank you for your call, Freddie.
Let me say something to you. Number one, your spirit is great. 10 out of 10. I want you to text me 202-875-9623. Everything you're saying about Little Rock, Arkansas, the land and the potential for culture and to be a part of our movement, I want to work with you. You can be a part of the Black Empowerment Movement, be a part of the Black Panther Network that's spreading, and you're a part of the hope. You're a part of the hope, brother. Text me so we can get to dealing together. That's number one. Number two is the Book of Khalid. I thank you for mentioning it. I just thought of it before you mentioned. Yes, the deadline has pushed back a couple of times, but it won't push back no more. On 7-7, July 7th, 2020, the pre-sales will begin. And I appear live in Los Angeles on September the 12th. at some point between July 7th and September the 12th, the hard copy, the 430-page, 120,000-word hard copy, will be available. The first hard signed hard copies will go to those who take on the pre-sales. I'm in the editing room right now as I speak, and I'm going to keep editing up to the final deadline because I want everybody to have one of the greatest stories that's never been told, and that's the story of the life and the times and the teachings and the struggles and the successes and the complete life of Dr. Khalid Abdul-Muhammad, the former national spokesman for Louis Farrakhan and the head of the New Black Panther Party, and the only private citizen ever to be renounced by both the United States Senate and the United States House of Representatives, the only private citizen ever to achieve that honor. And so thank you so much for that. And I want you to text me because as black men, I like your spirit and we should be working together.
Thank you, Freddie from Little Rock. Let's go to 646. 646? 646. Let's put them back on hold. Let's go back to 917. They might be there now. 917, the New York City, 917. Let's put 917. Let's put them back on hold. Let's go to Durham, North Carolina, 919. Let's put them on hold. Let's go to Durham again. That's another 919. 919-519. Are you there? Let's put them on hold. Let's go to another 919 exchange. 919? Hello? All right, let's put them back on hold. In fact, I'm going to clear this board with the calls that... with the last few minutes that we had with Attorney Shabazz on here, you can give us a call, 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. Before we leave tonight, Attorney Shabazz, I just want to touch on, because we see these things, that they never stop, and they seem to be continuing, these killings of unarmed black people. We see in Kentucky the young lady that was gunned down in her bed, her and her boyfriend sleeping in the middle of the night, have their door kicked in, and she gets riddled with 8 bullets in the bed. He gets shot also, but he fired back at police. We see that they did drop the charges against him. I don't know whether all charges are dropped. I see a published report where some of the charges have been dropped against him. One of the elected officials in Kentucky, black elected officials in Louisville, came out and called him a hero. And she was immediately attacked, which is expected by the Fraternal Order of Police, demanding an apology. The white folks always seem to be demanding apologies out of blacks. Speak to some of that with your legal hat. Talk about some of that if you can, in reference to.
Thank you so much.
Go ahead.
Thank you so much. Police killings and shootings and deaths of those behind bars is something that I'm certainly familiar with. One such case that I'm involved in right now is the killing of Tony Green down there in Kingsland, Georgia, who unfortunately the police officer got off with just very minor charges a few months ago. Police killings are happening all the time. You got the case in Louisville, a no-knock warrant case. And the no-knock warrant, supposedly the justification for the police going in to make the arrest, well, I think his name is Walker, he fires believing that the home is being invaded, and they shoot in inside 20 times, killing Brianna, I think she's an EMT.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to be a hell of a case there. I mean, first of all, we want to say this. We have to establish a premise. that the use of excessive force, which results in the highly disproportionate death of blacks or African Americans, is a way of life in America, and that is not subject to change as far as I foresee. I'm sorry, a person is usually very optimistic. I cannot tell you that American law enforcement is going to stop using excessive force and deadly force against us at this point in time. I can give you some factors like Dr. Fauci. I can give you some recommendations that will help mitigate the killings, but they're going to be killings because the very nature of white people in their interactions with dark people, particularly our men, as Dr. Francis Cress Welsh teaches us, is one of fear, is one of insecurity, and is one of a base nature that white people feel that they have to use excessive force and deadly weapons on us out of fear. And we could go all the way back to the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and say that they were birthed off of our death. There's something about the meeting of the two, the white police officer, the white colonist, the white invader against the black man, the indigenous man, woman, and family, that results in death for us. So thus, we also must understand here, before we finish the analysis, that we have to understand that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was right and Marcus Garvey were right. Marcus Garvey said, Africa for the Africans at home and abroad. He knew ultimately that Africa was our salvation. Elijah Muhammad said, separation into a land of our own, really, in order to be free of white law enforcement, we would have to be in a black nation. The Black Panther Party called for a plebiscite in their 10-point program, a UN-supervised plebiscite. The point that I'm making is, despite the lawsuits that I have won in court, and I have some that have not been won, because all of these cases, there's parts of U.S. federal law and the legal doctrine called qualified immunity that gives police officers the right to kill a citizen if he reasonably is in fear, if he declares that he is reasonably in fear of the use of force or death upon his person. So in the Louisville case, they're going to say that, well, we have the right to enter with a no-knock warrant, and because he shot, that placed us in imminent fear of death, and that's why we shot back. And therefore, that's why we are not going to pay your civil suit. Well, that's why we're seeking summary judgment against your civil suit. And that's why we're pursuing criminal charges against this man, and even if the criminal charges don't stick, we won't face any criminal charges. In the case in Georgia of Aubrey, there's a private citizen, and there's the appearance of DA misconduct. The political campaign seems to boil down to the DA must be fired. We say the DA must be fired, but again, you're dealing with a systematic issue. You know, one DA one day, another devil the next day. When we don't know whether the special prosecutor is going to effectively try the case or blow the case. What I'm saying is that the black attorney, as I conclude, the black attorney faces a hell of a battle that I can tell you all about, fighting these white cities and governments and corporations. We face a hell of a battle, and that's for civil litigation. That's for money damages to the family. And that works sometimes for the individual. It comes out of insurance policies. It has not proven an effective weapon against the police brutality. Civil lawsuits, though helpful, though brings attention, have not shown to be an effective remedy. Criminal prosecutions have gotten some traction, some officers. but it's still far off from justice here and there. Some officers are doing time. What we can only propose here is mitigated efforts. We can only say that the black attorneys and all attorneys should continue to fight it out in court. We must say that the black armed self-defense groups and the groups and brothers and sisters who are committed to self-defense outside of the group as individual persons must adhere to the law and the doctrine given to us by the Honorable Comrade Dr. Huey P. Newton, which is to arm yourselves or harm yourselves, to train as the urban sharpshooters. My good friends and urban sharpshooters in the Huey P. Newton Gun Club, who I recommend, urban sharpshooters, Huey P. Newton Gun Club, New Black Panther Party, all of these self-defense groups who we recommend, but we recommend that the general population take all measures to train themselves, educate themselves, and to arm themselves, particularly in states like Georgia, where we face hostile populations. And those are basically our main options, the legal option and the self-defense options and the separation options. You have to stay away from these people as much as you can. Aubrey is a good man. I believe in him. But don't be jogging. You got to choose where you're going to jog in this day and time. I mean, this is when we talk about separation until you get into your own territory, you have to try to separate as best you can on every level. You have to handle yourself, as I teach in my classes, and I'm teaching it on ShabazzUniversity.com. I'll talk about it tomorrow night. My class that I'm going to be teaching is Surviving Police Encounters, how to conduct yourself under police encounters. And we must know that we are soldiers as black men, that every time we step out of the door in that vehicle that we're soldiers and we must handle ourselves like soldiers. And you must understand that you are under the jurisdiction of an occupying army. So I say all that to say, brothers, we got to train, we got to separate, we got to litigate, and we got to agitate, and we got to build a self-defense movement. And still, inside of that, I cannot guarantee that the deaths will decrease. We can say that the deaths on the other side may increase, and that's pretty much about the best we can do to mitigate the situation.
Let me grab this. Let's go to Newport. Newport News.
Newport News. Hey, good evening, brothers. What's up, Brother Elliot, Brother Richard?
How are you?
All right now.
Yeah. Hey, I'm the old guy here, so first I'm going to shout out to Brother Shabazz, and I know he's a lawyer. I know he went to that original HU, but I'm down here close to HI, that is down the other HU. That's my dig at him. But I want to ask you, when you're going to be in the Norfolk area, because I'd actually like to come to some of your functions, but I want to say something else, too. You're one of the few people I've ever heard that breaks this down without saying it the way I have as an old coot. I'm 66. I'm born here in Yorktown, Virginia. What most people don't understand when you talked about that qualified immunity and stuff with police officers, the other part that's tied to what I call the lost cause narrative is white folks also have the ability to deputize themselves as an extension of the police force, which is what's going on with Aubrey. And I say that to say because I start digging in and asking some people without giving out their names. What ends up happening is what the press is not telling you, and I'm sure you probably know more than I do about this, but I found it out from some reliable sources. The neighbors in that community have been terrorizing this guy for 6, 7, 8 weeks. It actually came out in the Facebook chat. That's part of the reason some of these tapes are coming out. And the other thing I wanted to say to you is I love your spirit and understand that, and just let us know when you come in to the Yorktown area, Tidewater, Virginia. Peace.
I appreciate you. And again, 202, you can text me and I'll let you know if you're nearby. 202-875-9623. Just quickly, the attitude in Georgia is inflamed or exacerbated by the white nationalist attitude of Donald Trump, who has encouraged this type of vigilantism and this type of white nationalism, and this is what's playing out, and this is what's likely to play out in the near future. So All I can say is that the answer to white nationalism is black nationalism. All I can say is that the rise in white nationalism will be curbed by black nationalism, you know, and that's all I'll say.
Listen, let me get one more if they're here. 910, that's Fayetteville, 910.
Peace, brother. I'm just listening in.
Okay.
And I appreciate the truth that's being shared. Keep it up.
I'll put you back on hold. A caller, what's your name? Where are you calling from? This is the last call. Caller, what's your name? Where are you calling from? Caller, are you there? Can you hear me?
I'm here.
Question or comment for, I guess? Let me put them back on hold. Attorney Shabazz, listen, I want to thank you for being with us. Give out those numbers again, and I'm going to be in touch with you also because I'm going to network with Brother Jihad up here, and it's possible we'll get a hold of you. Maybe we can bring some of the men up here. I know he had been working with Captain Dennis with the 10,000 Fearless, so maybe it can be some type of collaboration where the men can get involved in this city because it's just like the brother described in Little Rock and in North Dallas about what's going on in the communities. The same thing going on up here in Philly. And this is the fifth largest city in the country.
Captain Dennis Muhammad is an exceptional community organizer who I respect greatly. And I'm going to look, and I look forward to working with you all and anyone else, any other sisters and brothers who want to, like what we're saying and want to work with us. We certainly look for a partnership with you. And so before I get off, I want to say that you can go to, again, follow the sanctions movement. For May 30th is Black Saturday. We're demanding no shopping at any non-black business. And if you know a business in your community that needs to be checked, text us at 202-875-9623. And if you're in an area where we're not operating, if you're willing to help check that business or bring accountability to that business, certainly we'll start working with you. If it's not May 30th, we're going to be back again for another Black Saturday. And we have different campaigns going every day now. Once again, if you're a black business person and you really want to use your talent to help others in business, if you want to help another brother or sister to understand how to get an SBA loan or how to improve their business. I know something about that. Okay? And it's tomorrow night, lastly, ShabazzUniversity.com on 6 p.m., ShabazzUniversity.com. We open up our own online education system. There are free public classes. There are other certification courses. And we'll explain to you how we're establishing a new education system to wake our people up where they have been misled. Book of Khalid Muhammad, pre-sales on 7/7. You follow me on Facebook at Malik Zulu Shabazz, and you'll figure out and find on 7/7 how the Book of Khalid can be purchased. Brothers, I thank y'all so much for allowing me this time. I really want the tape of this. We're going to take this tape and send it out because your questions and the way you set it up is exceptional.
Don't worry. I'll be in touch with you. I'll get you all the information. We'll talk.
And I really appreciate the work that you do.
Love y'all, man. Appreciate you.
What'd you say, Richard? Hold on a second, brother.
I was just saying I appreciate the work that Brother Shabazz, you're doing. So.
Oh, always.
It's definitely.
Thank y'all so much, Brother Ellie and Brother Richard. God bless and black power to both of you.
We'll talk soon. Peace. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening. Time for an Awakening with host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Escape the digital plantation. Abibitumi.com, Abibitumi.tv, Abibitumi.tv.com, Abibitumi.store are here for you. You are ready to be free of non-African social media. Don't run from danger, run to safety. Abibitumi.com is here for you. You are ready to be free of digital plantations to control your own products. Abibitumi.store is here for you. Abibitumi, Black Power. Abibitumi, the only word you need to know to join your global Kometz U Black family, to join your interconnected Kometz U Black communities. Escape the digital plantation now. Abibitumi.com, Abibitumi.tv, Abibitumi.tv.com, Abibitumi.store. We are here for you. Escape the digital plantation.
Know that this problem needs to be solved, and we can't keep relegating it to generation after generation because a few of us got a little money, a few of us got positions, a few of us have wealth, while the masses of our people are going steadily down. No one man can rise above the condition of his people. The brother said responsibility. Is it that we should let them take responsibility to do for us, or should we pool the knowledge that's at the table, the power that's in our community, the wealth that's in our community to change the harsh reality of black life in America? We have to do the job of fulfilling the black agenda. Thank you.
We have a message to the black man, because the black man today is a man who has been made now almost into a laughing stock. Nobody takes the black man serious. We are just used to be somebody's tool. We are the sportsmen, we're the singers and the dancers, and we're also labeled as the pimps and the criminals and the drug dealers and the killers and the vagabonds of society. We're the bogeymen of British society. and other Western systems. And we want to dispel that lie and destroy those myths and put the black man back on the map where we belong. Who is the black man? The black man is the original man. If it wasn't for the black man, no other men could be on this planet. We are the fathers of humanity. We gave birth to all of you.
We are the watchmen on the wall. You are too. You watch with a political eye. We watch from a spiritual eye. But we're supposed to be the watchmen for the people that vote for us. The sad thing is the people vote, but they don't give you the money to run your campaigns. So here come big business.
How are you? How are you, Judge? How are you, Alderman? How are you, Congressman? How are you? How are you, Reverend? Well, what can I do for you today, Reverend?
You can't do nothing for me. See, that's what we got to be careful of. We got to be careful of who we bow down to. But see, when you get in your congregation and you talk this Jesus, this powerful Jesus that's sitting at the right hand of the Father with all power in his hand, then you go with your hat in your hand to the governor, to the mayor, to the president, begging for some crumbs. You have sold your God cheap. And you make the white man downtown disrespect all of us.
Yeah.
Time for an Awakening is a proud part of the Black Talk Radio Network, the number one independent black digital and podcasting platform.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. Again, I want to thank our guest this evening, attorney and organizer and founder of the Black Lawyers for Justice, Attorney Malik Zulu Shabazz, was with us to share with us some of the initiatives that they're involved in and that you can get involved in. You know, Richard,
yeah,
it goes back to what we've been saying before about people coming on this program that's not just talking about what we need to do, but is doing it. And it's important that everybody realize that all of these things that you hear people when they come on this particular program and other programs, I don't want to say that we're the be-all and end-all by no means, but when they come on this program and they're talking about things, they're talking about, like Dr. King said, practical things that we all can do and all participate in that would make a difference.
That's it.
Because when you look at your leadership, this quote-unquote, and I'll use the term from Black Agenda Report, this black misleadership class, the only thing that they say that you can do is vote for them. They'll give you all types of ways where you can cast your vote. That's all. They don't want you participating in anything they're doing, and most of the time they don't want you to know what they're doing. But when you hear people coming across these airwaves and talking about things that can change your communities, they're talking about things that you can get involved in if you choose to. You can sit on the sideline, but the way things are and move, just the way situations is moving fast, we won't be able to afford to sit on the sideline much longer. People that want to sit on the sideline, we're going to have to get involved in some way. And I just want to mention that, Richard, because, you know, when Attorney Shabazz was talking about what they were doing as far as the sanctions campaign, the economic campaign, if somebody wanted to get involved in learning how to self-defense, learning how to use a firearm properly, or listen, he mentioned about four or five, the online education program similar to, but his is focusing on children, Brother Marcus Klein. This one is more focused on adults being able to learn some things if they want to deal in business, if they want to deal in organizing. I mean, what more can you want? And when I say what more can you want, a brother that's involved in a lot of different things and willing to share the expertise and showing other people how to get involved. That's what I'm talking about, Richard.
Mm. That's true. That's true. It's right there. You know, it's as you were saying that, I'm thinking, you know, one, that what people should realize, as you're saying, that we're bringing people in who are doing things. And I think that we should, I would like to ask the Time for Awakening listening audience to connect the dots, because there is options. But we have to look at that they're all interconnected, whether we're talking about children, whether we're talking about politics, whether we're talking about reparations, looking at the historical need for reparations, or are we talking about economic empowerment? And specifically when we're talking about that, as Brother Shabazz said, that now we need to shift our policies and the way we were doing things. If we were, whether we initiated or not, initiated in the sense we have been operating out of a policy of consumerism where we're giving up but not getting anything back, then it's, in this time we need to shift that. And that's what he said about economic empowerment, or at least what I, you know, really wanted to walk, I walked away with, right, the initiative. And that sanctions is a part of that policy program, that to demonstrate if you don't do fair trade, fair exchange, then this is what we have to do. That's not what we want to do, but this is what we, because it makes no sense for us to, looking into the future, to starve ourselves, because that's what we're doing. We're accepting abusive behavior, and we're accepting giving up our limited, very limited, if we really do have expendable income, so that you can grow, and there's nothing coming back when we're talking about a business-to-business relationship. And let's not think that a business-to-business relationship don't produce income or jobs on our side. And it's obviously producing jobs on your side, ability to be able to buy goods. It doesn't produce anything on our side but debt and continuation of poverty. And it doesn't just deal with just businesses, but that's in relationship to the government too. I think that we came to that agreement because, you know, the government is not all this money that they're giving, this $6 trillion that they were able to funnel out. And you're saying black businesses, or the black, as Brother Shabazz said, the black economy is not really getting anything. If in a time of an economic crisis, what is it? The number went up to, is it 25 million people?
What, does that work?
File for unemployment?
Oh, no. I think it's 42, the last count.
42?
Yeah. In fact, I can tell you, go ahead, keep, I mean, go, this, finish this, your thought.
This is a crisis, and the need for our policy shift. And I hope people are really understanding what we mean when we say policy. This is our plan. And you have a plan and you give a plan or agenda to somebody to say, this is what I demand. I think we're past the stage of want. Because if we say we want something, they say, okay, well, you want it, but I mean, I can't give it to you right now. You know what I mean? But you say I demand, then that means if my demands aren't met, then there's consequences, right? It should be, right? Whether I'm not going to give you my vote, whether you're not going to be able to be in the zip code or in the area where you can be able to do business, that for not meeting my demand, these are the consequences. And we're organized to be able to do that. The policy is shifting. It's not, as the European economists would say, this is not laissez-faire. Like, let it just go. We can't. You know, COVID, what they were trying to shift that they may have had in place to go to 2050, this COVID speeded up the shift to take place. There will be jobs that our folks was going to lose, say, by 2050. They're losing now. And if I'm not mistaken, Ellie, you can correct me if I'm wrong, they're not coming back. Supermarket cashiers, compared to more places, are scanning, calling in instead of walking in. There's no need for a clerk. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And those are the jobs that they said Black, especially young Black people, were filling.
A lot of service jobs. Mm-hmm.
And those are the ones who are applying for those positions, or a position in the sense of, I want my unemployment check. And then they telling us, well, because we weren't prepared, the system ain't prepared to give it to you, so you got to wait. So you can't get it right now. That don't stop that you got to eat right now. That don't stop the bills. And even if the bills are delayed, you got to be able to pay all that back money. So it behooves us to be recognized that when Brother Sabaz talks about Black empowerment and creating policies and these initiatives, this Buy Black offensive, or this the May 30th sanction, Black business sanctioning, that these are the initiatives to support the policy. But you know, you raised in the last question that you raised with Brother Shabazz and his response, and he responded about fear. It struck something, you know, as he was talking about what's going on with white folks, and specifically looking at in Georgia, the type of offensive, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, that's an offensive. I mean, these white folks are going on the offense. And even when the police or these new citizens, self-deputized citizens, or these, I have the right to say that you're harming, they going on an offensive with Black folks. Now, one thing, I don't know if this is true, Ellie, but I got to put it out like this. Some Black people are getting, I'm seeing these here reports where they're in white neighborhoods.
Who's in white neighborhoods? What do you mean?
Black people are in white neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they put themselves in white neighborhoods. Now, if you put yourself in harm's way, I'm not going to think bad about you, but I want you to understand you put yourself in harm's way.
Well, you know, Richard, when Tony Shabazz was saying about a brother Albury, the brother lost his life, and it's saddening for the family, and it's totally unfortunate. But you know, when we tell our youth about situations, we can't do that. And especially, you know, in areas where it's rural, it's white, you know, the jogging, and you know, you can't do that. You can't put yourself in those situations. I'll give an example and just use terms that I'm familiar with. When I was in high school, I went to down in Bach, and at that time, Richard, well, you know that area,
mm-hmm.
it was white.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I had to go to school every day. Now, I knew not to walk the box because a lot of times we walk. I could, you know, if I could get a token, that's cool. A lot of times, you know, my mom, dad, they couldn't afford to buy me tokens every week. They'd say, walk. You know what I mean? That's what you had to do. But I knew not to be walking through those areas by myself. And a lot of the blacks that went to school with me, we always, when we left school and when we went to school, we walked as a group, at least six of us. Now, I don't know what high school you went to, Richard, but. So you know the deal.
Yes.
You couldn't be walking all through those Italian neighborhoods by yourself, or you were a target, and eventually you were going to get handled or beaten or whatever.
So hey, nigga, where you going?
Yeah, exactly. So you had to go to school as a group. So you can't be, you know, you just can't. We can't let our children or young people do that. I know you want to exercise, but you know, choose areas where some of your people are. Don't run through these white suburban areas, and the next thing you know, they didn't pin you, boxed you in like this other guy that claimed he was just shooting a video. Now, all of a sudden, although it didn't take a rocket scientist to figure he was with those guys, where they didn't box this brother in and then gunned him down. And then when they put out the false reports, say that again.
Well, Aldridge, when the police officer stopped him when he was sitting in his car, in the park.
When they showed that on video. Yeah.
So the environment and the mother and son and the police officers came to the door and they were just going to walk. They wanted to walk on in without, you know, just, but that, again, that was, and I'm not against, as you're saying, it's just that in this, especially in this climate, but more importantly, how do we get this ideal across to the next generation, as Brother Shabazz said, that the heightenedness of white nationalism or the heightenedness of white fear. If it's 45 million people who are applying for unemployment, yes, we are applying, but a lot of them are white people applying for unemployment.
Yeah, because listen, a lot of our people was on unemployment before this started.
Or
fell off the road. Exactly. And now they said, I just did want to mention that to you. It says as of the latest, which was the 21st, I guess new figures will come out probably Tuesday after this holiday. But it says that more than 43 million have applied for unemployment. And it says, put it another way, 1 in 4 U.S. workers are jobless and have applied for aid in the last 10 weeks.
And you see them saying they're thinking by trying to force the business. They're saying, I want to go to work. I mean, they're coming with AK-47, you know, rocket launchers to the state building. You know what I mean? Like, you know, in front of sheriffs and police officers. Saying, put me back to work. So the economic fear, the anxiety that they can't maintain white privilege. And then but they still got bullets. And here you come running down the street. Or here you come riding in your car. And it doesn't matter. You can be a police officer, the doctor who was just giving out tests.
Yeah, they came and grabbed him. Yeah, exactly.
Right? The state representative that was just driving in her car. This, and we know in our environment, I mean, in our mental state, this is no new thing, but it requires us to have two types of policies. An internal policy. How do we do that? When there was segregation, it was already understood. Black people understood that. During enslavement, black people understood how they had to, even to how you had to bow your head or had to hush a child up in order to make sure that they didn't, a young male child or a quote unquote sassy young female child, not to be too aggressive as a baby. The danger that may mean to their life. This ain't no new thing.
Mm-hmm. History repeating itself. Yeah.
But the thing that struck me, if you don't mind me going on with this, is that when he said about the fear and this whole thing of dealing with the Chinese community and this whole thing of this internationalizing, this understanding of a policy, what I took with him, this understanding of fear. Imagine, Elliot. And we're talking about a different level when we're talking about Africans going into China, having flow into China. And Brother Shabazz brought up about Francis Trequest Wellesley. Now, if white folks have fear of interaction of black males with white women, what do you think that Asian men have fear of African men with Asian women in China? There is none? Are we to assume that this dynamics, the possibility that black males in China around Chinese women doesn't spark a level of fear? And this is just this ain't got nothing to do with governmental level. This is just at the people level, like going into the store, right? Going into a hotel, living into an apartment building. What, there's no women there? But what happens in a country where you only have a one-child rule? And those Asian women start to like those African men, and those African men from these different African countries start to coming in Asia. See, there's no problem with Asians going into Africa.
Mm-hmm.
That has no effect on the country of Asia or China, but it has an effect because they can go just like military men that went into these countries and they had children in those countries, had families while they were there.
Yeah, in Vietnam, yeah. Mm-hmm.
They didn't bring them back.
Yeah, I know it. What happened to them, Richard? that's another story.
Right. But when we're talking about the anxiety within, especially amongst, when you mentioned about, because we were young. When they was like, you walking through those Italian, you know, like this is what, 14, 15, 16, 15, 16, 17? What happens when these young Africans that already have these other ability, these images of abilities, come into this country and they have these relationships in the country? Do we shouldn't think at least apply Francis analysis to those of the fear of black males because of the fear of racial annihilation because Africans genetically dominant? Doesn't that change the composition?
Well, certainly it does.
It ain't just about being hooked up with an Asian woman. What happens when you have that child in those countries? What, doesn't that change the composition? So,
you're looking at it a little deeper, Richard. You're looking at it deeper. Listen, you're looking at it the way some of these government agencies are looking at this. That's not the way that the average person is looking at it. They're looking at it like you hear some of these black folks talking about it. Oh, well, you can't help who you fall in love with. You know, that type of laissez-faire type of thing. They're not looking at it like that at all.
That might be what those black guys who are going there are looking at it. Because you notice that it's always black guys we're seeing, right? I mean, you may see something different. So you can help me out in this. But the few things I've seen, it's been black males going into Asian shops that have been physically abused.
Yeah, generally they've been the target, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right? And they're young black males. And you talk about young Asian males who see, now they ain't got no problem. You can see them Asian males, they can break dance, or I don't know what the new, they can pop, they can flow, they can rap. They can even do, you know, they can take on certain aspects of the hip hop culture. But do you think that they want them, these African males, dating the girl that they want to date? They ain't got nothing to do with the government. I'm just trying to apply the principle, as you say, the analysis and the relationship that the fear white male fears, and because white male fears about black men, the fear of losing, what they always say, they come in and they're going to overwhelm our community. And what they say, get your bags, let's get out of here.
Yeah, well, the struggle continues, Richard, on all fronts.
Yeah, it's important for us to understand that that's why we need to be, and that's why I like what Brother Shabazz says, that even though he's dealing with economic policy shifts that has to go on, and providing the educational aspect and other things, that these things we have to, it's something that we have to take in this time, the initiative to do that. We have to create we have to create a new relationship, whether it be with the political community, the political leadership, or with the church leadership, the institutional leadership, or with the political parties. We have to say, this is what we demand. If we don't do it, this time we're definitely looking at our own destruction, because there's nothing going to be out there.
Richard, before we start winding things down, and we got a few more minutes. They got it's a holiday on the calendar tomorrow, so a lot of people ain't going to be moving around necessarily. Let me give you something for you.
Anyway, hell yeah.
Yeah, you're right about that.
I should have said that.
Let me give you something for your political scorecard or some of our listening audience about keeping an eye. I told you before, what these other folks are doing, they're going to do. Mm-hmm. Protect their own interests and things like that. But the political scorecard I want our people to keep a record of is what their representatives is supposed to be doing and what they're doing. It's just a lot of times it's just two separate things. Now, this was from last June, Richard, and if you remember, we talked about it on the program, about that BDS legislation and things of that nature. Right. Let me read this, because this is from last year, almost a year to the time. This was from June of last year. A couple paragraphs I want to read. Lawmakers reintroduce pro-Israel legislation that didn't make the cut in the last Congress. Washington. Senator Marco Rubio, Florida, reintroduced pro-Israel legislation that did not pass in Congress last session. Rubio, together with James Reince, Republican from Idaho, on Thursday, the first day of the new Congress, combined a number of Middle East-related bills into a single bill, jump-starting the process. The first item the Senate will take up in the new Congress will be a bill to deal with the crisis in Syria and support the allies in the Middle East, Rubio said on Twitter. Well, the allies in the Middle East is Israel.
Mm-hmm.
Among the items is the Elena Ross Lighten United States Israel Securities Assistance Act, named for the Republican Florida congresswoman who just retired and who tried to shepherd the bill through the last Congress. The bill would codify the 2016 deal between the Obama administration and the Netanyahu government. that guarantees Israel $38 billion in security assistance over 10 years, protecting the assistance from the whims of any current or future president. Also included in the Rubio bill is a version of the bill that languished in Congress that would establish federal protections for states passing laws divesting pension funds from groups that boycott Israel. That section of Rubio's bill is called the Combating BDS Act of 2019, referring to the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement targeted to Israel. It is separate from the more controversial anti-BDS bill that also failed to make the cut in last Congress that would have established criminal fines for joining Israel's boycotts. Now, this was last year. It was kind of going back and forth and this and that and the other, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, let me read this. This was from May 22nd. So the date is the 24th. So this was Friday. Published report. Check it out, Richard. The Senate approves $38 billion for Israel amid historic economic turndown. This report came from the United Press, McAfee, California. The Senate Foreign Relations Committee quietly passed a bill yesterday to give Israel a minimum of $38 billion over the next 10 years, despite the ongoing devastation to the U.S. economy caused by the coronavirus. The bill, Senate Bill 3176, will now go before the full Senate, since the legislation has already been passed through the House of Representatives. It's already been passed by Congress. The article I read was they was going back and forth on it. Now, when did you see it was passed by Congress? But let me continue. We'll now go before the full Senate, since the legislation has already been passed by the House of Representatives. If the Senate passes the bill, it will then go to the President to be signed into law. The bill was passed by the committee under two unusual circumstances and with almost no public awareness. First, Senate Committee Chairman Jim Reinch, now I just read about him last year, of Idaho, refused to allow a live stream of the meeting, despite the fact that Senate's rules panel have recommended that extra efforts be taken to ensure public transparency while the Capitol is closed to the public. And the pretense of reporters to be severely limited. The presence of reporters severely limited. The Senate's press gallery standing committee of correspondents had objected strongly to Wright's decision to not allow a live stream. Second, the bill was passed without being named, debated, or even discussed, even though it would set into law the largest such aid package in U.S. history. There has been no mention of the bill in most medias in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
The massive package is particularly noteworthy in light of the current devastation of the American taxpayers who will be footing the bill. Over $10 billion per day in recent months, approximately 30 million Americans have lost jobs. 100,000 small businesses have already closed forever, and over 7 million are at risk to do so. The bill was voted as a part of a package of 15 bills that was voted on in a block together. After Senator Kaine said he didn't know what the list contained, Reinch responded, "I'm not trying to pull anything here. This was circulated among the staff." Reinch then rapidly listed the number, but didn't give the titles. There was then a voice vote, and the motion passed unanimously.
Mm.
Now, nothing was stated on the block of 15. Now, let me finish this up. It's another paragraph. The bill entitled the United States Israel Security Assistance Authorization Act of 2020 expands and sets into law a Memorandum of Understanding agreement signed by the Obama administration with Israel in 2016. This agreement is non-binding and is not required by law. It also sets $38 million as a ceiling. The legislation just passed by committee would make this dispersal legally required. And in addition, it would make the $38 billion a floor rather than the ceiling. That's the bill, the way it's going to pass.
Right. You say the bottom.
Yeah. In other words, the amount of money could legally go higher.
Mm-hmm.
Given the power of the pro-Israel lobby, combined with the fact that the U.S. media are not informing Americans of the use of this tax money, the likelihood is that U.S. money to Israel will go up in the future, possibly even this year. So we see here that that bill passed through Congress, slipped through after you heard some rumblings about it earlier, that it went through, and here it went through the Senate with Cory Booker and Kamala Harris and all of them voted unanimous. A bipartisan effort. You know, we've been noticing the past couple of weeks, like that no-knock bill that was passed through dealing with Maryland, Washington, and I forgot the other state, passed through the Congress. We've been seeing a lot of bipartisan, you know, the stuff that they show on the television and to people about this, you know, they don't like Republicans, Republicans don't like Democrats. It's a lot of bipartisanship going on, Richard, when it comes to certain things.
Yeah. Look, Elliot, they just floated $6 trillion into this economy. Now, they were talking about deals being made when it was just billions of dollars or trillion of dollars. $6 trillion? Who benefiting? And isn't that a benefit that this Israeli, isn't that a benefit that somebody's getting?
I'm gonna go back to New York, Newport News. Brother Otis wants to make a comment in reference to that. Let's go to Newport News.
What's up, Brother Elliot? Yeah, look, you're precise and on point, but you know, I work with a lot of youngsters, and you and I are at the age where we've done a lot of reading and prep. Same thing with Bro Richard and most of this audience. But I want to tell you something related to what you're talking about. I just finished having a conversation with some people over the very bill that you're talking about. But let's understand the continuity to this. This bill actually originated in 2009 with Barack Obama's commitment over a 10-year period to give money to Israel. Mm-hmm. I actually talked about it on one of your programs when you called in. But I want to say the important point to you and relate it back to black representation, because you just had Brother Shabazz on. This is where the accountability comes in. When that bill was set up in 2009, it committed over $300 and some billion to Israel for defense. But the difference is, that's what it sold to us as a public in the United States. But understand what's going on. In the midst of Corona, the point comes out that you're sending $300 billion guaranteed over 10 years to Israel. But arguing it back and forth, the Democrats get to come out and tell us how they fought to hold back on this. But you just finished going through the sequence to show what they did. But they did something else to increase, even though Obama, bipartisan, committed over a 10-year period to do money. We're now at 2020?
Mm-hmm.
He started this in 2009. By the time he had another iteration of it, when he committed $30 billion or $38 billion a year, you just made a significant factor on what this guy just did. He changed that from the ceiling to the floor. So now, the $380 billion that you claimed you're going to give over 10 years, here we are in 2020, 11 years later, and you gonna change the law in the midst of a pandemic so you can do exactly what you just said. Cobble together three or four different bills, sell it off to me as something else. I want to make one other statement. This is where I have a problem with the Black Caucus, CBC, all of them. When I say to them, they put out tweets. We're going to fight to make sure that this time around, Brother Shabazz brought it up, that they make sure some money get targeted to black business. Hold on. You got a staff too. Why the hell weren't you at the table when the first Corona bill
exactly
was? They gave the first, they sold it to us as $2 trillion, but I do the research. Actually, what they did is gave the Fed the ability to take what they had and leverage it 10 times more. So that means they actually gave away $6 to $8 trillion to businesses. Don't want to give you no money, but watch this. No money for you, $1,200 a month. But the important part that what you just said is, but now you're going to up money that you're sending to another country that guess what that country has? Full health care, no co-payments, no Medicaid with co-payments and extra prescription payments, none of that crap in this system. So you're actually subsidizing to allow them people to run their economy the way ours should be run. Take care of your own. That's what I'm going to say.
And expand into Palestinian land.
Let me finish, Brother Richard, and I'm going to get it out. I applaud you, brothers, for bringing on Dr. Darity, because you know where I stand with him from years ago. So, and I'm going to say this to Brother Elliot. When you told me about trying to monitor somebody else, I tell you, sometimes when you get old, you understand you got to let young people kind of mature at their own level. But I appreciate the conversation you had with Dr. Darity and his wife. And I say to you the same thing I said to Dr. Rogers. In reality, if you look at that from here to equality, it kind of lays out a roadmap where if we get out of our feelings, we can come together and do this as a one black people.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Mm-hmm. I agree.
They're coming together, and that's why I appreciate what Brother Shabazz and his call to the black middle class, to all, mm-hmm. right? They're coming together on both sides. And this is, you know, I think this is something I've been consistent in saying. That is no easy task, because we're this even, and that's why I say, even with that $6 trillion, there are black interest groups. Call it the Black Chamber of Commerce, call it the Black Executive Pack, call it the Black Pack. They're going to get from the Democratic Party, which coming out of the CBC, they're going to get something. Now, is the black people, small black business, are they going to get anything? I don't think so. But them interest groups.
I want to focus on something and make you sure you understand. What I'm saying to you is, really, if we step back and get out of our feelings.
Right.
Based on you had with Dr. Darity and A. Kirsten Mullen and listening to Dr. Shabazz. When we get out of our feelings and do what you've been doing since I've been following your program and deal with empirical facts, this is what I'm saying to you. Most of us really are not understand. It's almost like an ecosystem. Mm-hmm. I have no problem with what that brother said today. Even though I may not want to take the very same path that he's taken, I'm still pushing for justice for us as a people. That means you get out of your feelings, and I'll put it to you the best way I can say it, because I hear where you were going with this. I'll say it this the best way. A lot of people listen to Dr. Martin Luther King's speech about the drum major. Mm. And most academics, I call them, that's my personal thing, because a lot of people get an education and indoctrination and don't really start thinking. But what I'm going to say to you is, he talks about the drum major. Most people think that he's trumpeting that as something you should do. If you really go through that speech, you understand what he's saying. The problem with us, everybody wants to be the drum major and can't pick out the tuba player is just as important.
Right, there you go. There
the go. Class over there race is. Becomes a fallacy. No, race, that class is built on race. Mm-hmm. So if you don't fix the foundation, don't give me no damn invoice for what you did for the rest of the building. That's why I'm with it. Much love to you, brother.
Peace. Have a good one. Richard, coming up to the end of another program, man. And I really enjoyed the dialogue, but not only the callers, at the guests. I enjoyed this program. I enjoy all of them, but it's something that really kind of hit home and points to some work that we can immediately start on, put it that way. And I'm going to reach out again to Brother Jihad, because he was involved here with Captain Dennis. So right. The things that he was doing, That'll be right in line with some of these brothers, because some of these places need to be shut down in these communities and at least show the people in the communities an example of fighting. Because just like he said, there's a lot of people out there. He said, what did he say, Richard? 9.9 out of 10 people support what he's doing. But nobody doing it. Listen, it goes back to something that Cynthia McKinney said when she drew that parable of roots and Kunta Kinte being beat. He was being beat, and it was dozens of our people just standing there watching. Mm-hmm. Now, in their mind, they didn't want to see this happening to their brother, but they didn't do anything about it. So, you know, this is an opportunity that we all can get involved in something and tell our children to stay out of them places, because they ain't doing nothing poisoning the community. They're selling blunts to teenagers and all. They know what these young people going to be doing. And when I say young people, they ain't over 21. That's going in there getting those blunts, and they selling them. I got a place two doors down from me. It's an Asian restaurant. Every time you look, L and I is over there. And, you know, I'll be newsy. Soon as I see L and I leaving, going to the car, I'll go over there and ask them about, did you check the backyard? You know, because I see the way they keep that restaurant and that backyard. See, those restaurants, Richard, are supposed to have a dumpster. They supposed to have a private dumpster for their volume of trash.
Right.
Because the city feels, if you got a restaurant, you got more trash than just an average person putting out a bag or two.
Right.
But they don't have a dumpster, this place. So they put a lot of stuff out on trash day. And then the yard is full of, you know, for a restaurant, that place is filthy. So, you know, I'll go out there and ask someone, did you check the back? And they'll tell me, well, no, we're not a food inspector. I was here to cite them for selling tobacco to minors. They'll tell me.
Mm-hmm.
So these, evidently, the fines don't shut them down. Either they send this over to the Asian Businessman Association and they handle it for them. It's something going on politically.
Mm-hmm.
But we can stop this. We can stop it. We can put a stop to this. It takes the community to shut them down. And just like Attorney Shabazz said, he said it told him something when he said they was outside of that place up there in New York. And they sent about 50 police there when they was wanting to shut that restaurant down. They had the access to call that many police out there for a peaceful demonstration. It wasn't like they stormed the place or did any harm to the people inside. They just stood outside and told people don't go inside. And that warranted 50 police to be on the scene. And if you've seen the video, Richard, I don't know whether you've seen the video of it. They're out there, and they were social distance. They all had masks and gloves on. What was the police going to do to them? They was having a peaceful demonstration. They wasn't violating it. They've been grabbing black folks when they don't social distance, throwing them on the ground and stuff like that. But these men were social distance, and they had their masks and gloves on. I'm gonna check out that that's tomorrow too, Richard. I think I wrote it down. I got a whole stack of papers. That's tomorrow. That's Shabazz University. Right. Okay, good. And plus, I gotta check my email because he did send a link to it. I'll forward it to you.
Okay.
Before we go, I want to just make everybody aware of the other programming on Time for Awakening Media, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, African Perspectives with Brother Oshie from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Always interesting dialogue, conversation, and guests on African Perspectives. That's with Brother Oshie from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. From 1 to 3, Black People's Matrix with Brother Franklin Jones. From 6 to 8 on Monday evenings, you heard him come on the program. Host of Acres of Diamonds, Brother Jihad Ahmed, and that's from 6 to 8 on Time for an Awakening Media on the first and third Monday of every month. Conversation Reparations and Cobra's program from 9 to 10 on Time for an Awakening Media. On Tuesday, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers. That's Tuesday, 8 to 10 on Time for an Awakening Media. And on Saturdays, he's back also with the sisters that host Black Reality Think Tank, and they're on from 4 to 6 on Saturday evening on Time for An Awakening Media. On Fridays, Time for An Awakening is back from 8 to 10 on Friday evening. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back on Friday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, or you're watching your children playing after school, they seem to be so unaware. I know the things that they'll soon have to take care of. We've got to do something, yeah, to save the children. Such a small part of the things that they'll soon be right at the heart of. My little Tommy, he said he wants to be a fireman.
To save the children.